Whiskey Business, States of Love, Book 1. Written by Avon Gale. Narrated by Kurt Graves. If asked, Rider-Waite would say the reason he decided to sell his family's recipe to Bluegrass Bourbon in Lexington was because no one tried to speak to him in good old boy. Ryder was from Gallows Grove, Kentucky, and every single person he met with knew it. Ryder would sit down with Mr. So-and-so or Miss This-and-That. They'd open their mouths, and Ryder would hear the worst approximation of a Kentucky drawl ever. They should be ashamed of themselves. Some of them, many of them, were also from Kentucky. And if they thought Ryder was stupid enough to believe that accent was real, then there was no way he was selling them anything. He'd find some other way to keep the family business afloat. Trying to relate to him by sounding like a stereotype? Insulting. Bluegrass Bourbon was Ryder's last chance, and his hopes weren't very high when he went to Lexington to meet with Garrett Wood. But Wood's Kentucky accent was subtle, an inflection on the O's that made him sound like he was from northern Kentucky, closer to Cincinnati. The way he said, "please," instead of "excuse me," told Ryder he was right. People heard Kentucky and thought bourbon and horse racing, but Garrett Wood's Kentucky was more Cincinnati-style chili and sausage mush getta. Wood also didn't suggest changing the name. Gallows Grove had been making Hanged Man bourbon for so long, Ryder couldn't imagine calling it anything else. Ryder was also angling to get Gallows Grove as a stop on the bourbon trail, because that would bring much-needed revenue in tourist dollars to the tiny town. Gallows Grove was a blip on the map between Lexington and Pikeville, Kentucky, with fewer than 500 residents. Ryder refused to give up the recipe and have it distilled anywhere but his hometown, and that was a sticking point for the other companies he met with. Wood couldn't promise the stop on the trail without some buy-in from investors, but that was the first step toward achieving his goal and getting the distillery some essential improvements. But Wood seemed amenable to Ryder's plans, and there was only one small requirement that Ryder didn't like. Wood insisted on sending a guy down to gather some initial data, and while that set off some warning bells in Ryder's head, he couldn't see a reason why he should refuse. That Adam Keller guy would show up, write up some reports, and be out of Ryder's hair. Wood and his company would see that the bourbon was a valuable addition to their line, and investors would clamor to provide the necessary monetary means to put Gallows Grove on the trail. Ryder's town wouldn't fade into memory, leaving him standing alone in front of the Last Meal diner with a bottle of Hanged Man bourbon, possibly haunted by generations of his infuriated ancestors. Adam Keller showed up the following Tuesday, a week after Ryder returned home from signing over the recipe to Bluegrass. Ryder triumphantly reported back to the townsfolk that he'd arranged to get improvements on the distillery, which would hopefully lead to a spot on the bourbon trail. The town responded by badgering him about where the hell they were supposed to put a parking lot and bemoaning the influx of crime the tourists were sure to bring. But they grudgingly admitted he'd done a good job. Ryder expected nothing less. He knew every man, woman, and child in Gallows Grove by name and had lived there his whole life, and he knew exactly how suspicious they were, too. It went along with the whole descendants of bootleggers thing. He made sure they knew that Wood was sending a company man, reminded the town that they needed to make a good impression when the guy got there, and sincerely hoped that was the end of his entrepreneurial career. He'd manage the distillery like he'd been doing since he graduated nearby Elliott County High School, cut himself a paycheck, and bask in the knowledge that he'd saved his small town from extinction, even if they bitched about a parking lot. Of course, it wasn't that easy. "Ryder!" Heather Combs, the office manager at the distillery, came barreling into the office breathlessly on Tuesday morning. "The Lexington boy's here, and he's cute." She gave him an encouraging smile. "Maybe he's gay too, and you two will hit it off. We'll have us a gay wedding in our new parking lot. Show that Kim Davis we're not all awful people." Gallows Grove defied every single stereotype people had about small towns in Kentucky. Ryder was gay. He had never shown any interest in the local girls, and everyone had known it since he was about 13 years old. Most people just reacted to the news with a shrug, and, well, his ma was a witch. What did you expect? Ryder's mother was a witch in the sense that she didn't go to church and liked to talk to her plants. But she also read tarot cards, which is where Ryder got his name, after the Rider-Waite deck, and made a mean hot toddy. So, apparently, that was enough to count. But she died from breast cancer when Ryder was 15, leaving him the distillery and a good luck charm she buried beneath the floorboards. Her memory was like a photograph faded with age, but the thought of her still made him smile. She would have loved being part of the Bourbon Trail, and he just knew she would have set up a table with a colorful patterned silk throw to read the cards for visitors. "Who said he was cute?" Ryder asked Heather suspiciously.
"It was Sadie," Heather said, referring to her niece. "And Sadie reads people, you know. She's up on her cute boys and whatnot."
Ryder did know, because they had stacks of people, going back to 2001, piled up in the office. Come to think of it, maybe they should have cleaned before that Adam guy showed up.
"Anyway, Sadie says he went to Willie's office."
Heather was in her mid-40s, and always, without fail, wore some kind of University of Kentucky paraphernalia on her person. That day, it was a pair of earrings, sparkly little blue things with a distinctive UK logo. She started working at the distillery after she graduated high school, too, and was some kind of cousin twice removed to Ryder. He figured he was related to probably everyone there in some way, which was another reason it was impossible to find someone to date. Willie's office? Willie McRae was the town businessman, serving as a loan officer, notary public, and tax accountant. He'd been the mayor once or twice, too. I wonder why he went there.
Probably looking for a place to stay, wouldn't you guess? Willie can help him out, since he's got that realtor license.
Heather continued thoughtfully as she perched on the desk. She was short, about 5'2", and still favored the sort of hairstyle that called for an obscene amount of hairspray.
"About the only place I could think of is the Mancy's place, and that's, well, nobody wants to rent a room in the funeral home."
Ryder shrugged. Figured he'd just come in a few times a month from Lexington. The alarm bells he didn't want to listen to when he was negotiating the sale of the bourbon recipe started playing merrily in the background. It never occurred to him that anyone would actually want to stay in Gallows Grove. It hadn't occurred to anyone else, either, because the closest hotel was the Little Sandy Lodge, and that was still a bit of a drive. Ryder lived in a half-renovated apartment on top of the trapdoor, the town bar, located in the small downtown area. There were a few more apartments on the list to renovate if more businesses opened up in the empty buildings, but none of them were even close to habitable. Even if they were, Ryder didn't want the Lexington man to be his neighbor. He wanted the Lexington man to stay in Lexington. Before Ryder could process what to do about Mr. Lexington, his Uncle Zeno, the bourbon master, strolled in. He was a strange man, even by Gallows Grove standards, even by Waite's standards. He had the coal-black hair common to most Waites, and like Ryder, he had two different colored eyes, one blue, one green. In fact, he and Ryder looked so much alike, Zeno was often mistaken for Ryder's father. But Ryder's mom, Maisie, was Zeno's sister, and since Ryder's dad split before he was born, he was the only real male authority figure in Ryder's entire life. Zeno lived with a woman named Eden Jones. They'd never bothered to get married, because they couldn't agree where to go on a honeymoon. They couldn't agree on baby names either, so they never had kids. When he wasn't fussing over bourbon, Zeno liked to repair antique clocks. There was a constant ticking sound in their house that made Ryder want to jump out of a window every time he went over there. "Hey, Uncle Z." Ryder gave his uncle a fond smile. Zeno's strange eyes settled on Ryder.
"I hear that Lexington boy is here."
"He's cute," Heather piped up. "Sadie says so."
She coughed and gave Ryder a pointed look. Ryder let that go.
How's Aunt Eden?
Marriage, or lack thereof, didn't make Zeno's sweet-tempered partner any less Ryder's aunt. Well, she was sweet-tempered until a Kentucky basketball game came on, that was. Then, she turned into a raving lunatic, like most everyone in the town. Like most everyone in Kentucky. When UK had lost to Wisconsin on the tail end of a perfect season in the NCAA tournament in 2015, the town had declared a day of mourning, and Ryder gave everyone free whiskey. Ditto when UK's hated rivals, the Duke Blue Devils, won the championship, which none of them watched because, well, because it was Duke. Being invested in sports teams meant a lot of drinking away your sorrows.
She's fine. Says to call her if you want that old chair of ours for your apartment. But you probably don't. Cat's been sitting on it for years.
His uncle crossed his arms over his chest and looked at Ryder.
What are you going to do about that Lexington boy? Told you it was a bad idea to let them send someone.
Ryder resisted the urge to roll his eyes. How exactly would he have stopped that? It wasn't like he could have said no.
It'll be fine, Uncle Z. Just trust me. I did pretty good so far, didn't I? Thank goodness Maisie put that charm under the floorboards, Zeno said dourly. I got some barrels to check. You keep this kid out of my way, Ryder.
Since the whole point of this kid being in town was to check things out, that seemed next to impossible. Ryder just sighed, ran a hand through his messy black hair, and said,
I'll do my best, Uncle Z.
Time to go find Mr. Lexington. For the first time in his life, Adam Keller wished he'd gone to law school like his father wanted and gone to work for Keller Farms. He'd thought he was defying parental expectations by getting an MBA and working for a distillery instead of the family business, but maybe that was dumb. Because he would bet his BMW that lawyers for a thoroughbred farm wouldn't have to travel to some tiny-ass town named after a method of public execution and find some guy who was named after cards used to tell fortunes. Adam laughed when Mr. Wood told him to find Ryder Waits, but Wood was apparently not up on his New Age nomenclature and had no idea that Ryder Waite was a well-known tarot deck. Which, fair enough. Adam only knew the name because his college roommate his freshman year at the University of Kentucky had been into that kind of thing. He'd also been way too fond of incense and spent most of his time drumming in the park to ease his stress. Adam wasn't sure what the kid was stressed about, since he never went to class, but who knew? Adam parked his BMW in the small downtown, if you could call it that, of Gallows Grove, and winced when he heard the beep of the car's automatic lock echo in the mostly empty street. It was force of habit, but he felt like an asshole locking his doors when he could imagine that no one there bothered. Even though there was no one out on the street, Adam had the distinct feeling he was being watched as he approached Wiley McRae's office.
Go down there and make sure I'm not going to lose this company money because I wanted to stick it to the guys at Maker's Mark.
Wood had told him when he gave him the assignment.
You're the sharpest guy I've got, Keller. Be respectful that they're a bunch of quirky bumpkins with a goddamn delicious bourbon, okay?
Bluegrass started as a consortium of smaller distilleries and was still fighting for recognition in an industry that prided itself on authenticity and tradition. In fact, Gallows Grove had one of the longest-running stills in the nation, and had been making Hanged Man bourbon since its inception, so Adam supposed it made sense that Wood wanted to acquire the rights to the recipe. It sure seemed like a lot of effort for what would essentially become a specialty house line, though. It was also possible that Wood sent Adam on this little adventure because he was a Kentucky boy himself, Lexington born and bred. Gallows Grove was an odd mix of Appalachia, the South, and Kentucky. And while it wasn't that far from Lexington, it sure as hell seemed like a different world to him. He wasn't sure that his upbringing would get him very far with the residents, especially if they saw him as some kind of threat. but he'd noticed quite a few UK flags proudly flying in the front of the homes and businesses he'd passed driving into town. At least, no matter where you were in Kentucky, you could count on finding a Wildcat fan or two. 100.
"Help you there, son?"
a man who must have been Willie asked. He was in his late 50s, maybe, with suspenders and a shirt a size or two too small, and a neatly groomed mustache that contained far more hair than his head.
"You need some directions? You lost?"
The accent was country and Kentucky and something else, something melodic that wasn't as easily defined. Not his mother's smooth Lexington drawl, not the twang of his slightly less civilized Bracken County, Kentucky cousins, not the guys he sometimes met up with to indulge in a little stress relief of his own. Banging, maybe, but not the kind that needed drums.
"I'm looking for a place to rent for a few weeks," Adam said.
He held a hand out and tried a smile. "Adam Keller. I'm here on behalf of Bluegrass Bourbon."
"Oh, well."
Willie shook his hand a little too firmly, and then shuffled around a bit and sat down at his desk. The chair gave an audible creak as his weight settled.
"I'll see what we got. Ain't much."
His computer looked like it was from 1994, and the monitor was the kind that sounded like it had a fan in the back, from a 747. Willie clicked the keys the way a drugged chicken who wasn't particularly hungry pecked at food on the ground.
"Got a few places for sale, but you won't want anything permanent?"
"God, no."
"Do you have anything downtown?"
Adam asked.
"It seems, centrally located."
"Well, now we do have a few apartments that I'm renovating." He said it, renovating. "But they ain't quite ready yet. The Mancy's got a room they rent out, but it's, well, it's in a funeral home."
"Wait, what?"
Before Adam could say anything or ask if that was a joke, there was a jingle as the bell above the door went off. Willie looked up, and a smile bloomed beneath his mustache.
"Ryder, come on in, son, and meet Mr. Keller. He's just in from Lexington, from those bluegrass folks."
Adam turned to greet Ryder Waits, and was taken completely by surprise at the sight that awaited him. Ryder stood in the doorway with the mid-morning sun shining around him, looking like some hillbilly, avenging angel, and hotter than just about any man Adam had ever seen. Ryder was young, slim-hipped, and dressed in skinny jeans and a black Murder by Death Band t-shirt. He was clean-shaven and had hair as dark as pitch. It was too long and hanging in his face, his gorgeous, high-cheekboned, perfect face. Oh, fuck everything. That was not good. No one in this town was supposed to be attractive, and, if Adam's gaydar was functioning correctly, they were definitely not supposed to be gay.
"Hi,"
Ryder said, in a voice that went right to Adam's dick. "I'm Ryder Waits. You're Mr. Keller, is that right?"
"Hello, yes, Adam Keller,"
Adam said, trying to find his composure as he shook Ryder's proffered hand. Up close, Adam noticed that Ryder's eyes were two different colors. One was a gold-flecked hazel, and the other was a perfect UK wildcat blue.
"Mr. McRae is trying to find me accommodations for a few weeks."
God, he knew where he'd like to sleep. "No, no. Professional. Keep it professional."
"That might be a little tricky."
Ryder was all charm and smiles, but there was something shrewd and calculating in his gaze. "We ain't a town people visit unless they know someone. And you're most certainly a stranger. An unwanted one."
"Mr. McRae said something about a room in a funeral home,"
Adam said, refusing to back down no matter how hot Ryder Waits happened to be.
"Seems fitting in a town called Gallows Grove. I'm sure it will be fine."
Those odd, mismatched eyes flicked briefly to Willie, who was standing behind Adam. Ryder wasn't quite quick enough to stop the flare of annoyance, but he smoothed it over with admirable effort.
"Should be. We don't have a lot of people coming or going, so it's not all that busy."
Adam was absolutely not going to laugh at that.
"Is it close to the distillery?"
Probably a good idea to remind Ryder, and himself, why he was there. the distillery. Whiskey. Right. Ain't nothing very far away from anything in Gallows Grove, but actually the distillery is a mite bit of a drive. Why don't you get your stuff, Mr. Keller, and I'll show you where your room is. Willie, you'll call the Manseys and tell them they've got a tenant, won't you?
Sure thing, Ryder.
Thanks. Then we can get on over to the distillery, since that's why you're here. Ryder's voice had the same sing-song quality as Willie's, but the heavier overlay was a drawl, southern and Kentucky, and it made Adam hard in his suit pants. Fuck his life. The funeral home was a white Victorian with a wraparound porch and lots of windows, gently lit from within, and a small, tasteful sign that said, Ever After Funeral Home in the front. Adam stared for a moment at the sign. Weren't funeral homes generally named after families? And shifted his bag on his shoulder. He was gripping his suitcase so tightly that his hand was beginning to cramp. The Manseys own this place, but they don't live there. Used to be Janine Mansey lived here and took care of the house, but she died about 6 years ago.
Are you going to tell me she died in the funeral house?
Adam followed Ryder up the few steps onto the porch and tried to ignore the man's ass in his skinny jeans. The interior of the funeral home was quiet and still, with just the faintest sound of a clock ticking. Adam frowned. A ticking clock in a funeral home seemed unnecessarily macabre. Or maybe it was just mean.
No way. We don't make anything that easy for anyone, Ryder said,
with a particular emphasis and a look at Adam, in case Adam was missing the not-subtle comparison. She was on a vacation in Hilton Head, died on the beach, reading a book. Adam smiled despite himself.
Not a bad way to go, I guess.
Definitely not. But she was a hell of a stubborn woman.
Refused to even think about putting an elevator in this place, even though her room was up on the second floor, and she was 90 if she were a day. Ryder gave him a sly smile.
They say she still haunts the place.
Hope you're not afraid of ghosts. Adam gave a shrug.
I don't believe in ghosts. Not sure I believe in this room, either. Are you going to show me where it is, or were you of a mind to leave me a series of clues and see if I found it on my own?
My, Mr. Keller, you are a feisty one.
Ryder winked and started humming something that sounded like My Old Kentucky Home, as he led Adam back to the kitchen. You can use the kitchen down here, of course, and there's a small living room off the main parlor with a television, but I don't know if it works. And like I said, we don't have a lot of funerals, so it shouldn't be a problem while you're here. But if it is, well, the whole town will be in attendance, so I don't know what to tell you other than stay upstairs or make a casserole and join in the grieving. Adam didn't know if he was serious or not, so he didn't respond. He followed Ryder up the back staircase. Most of the rooms up here are used for storage. Ryder paused in front of a closed door. So, old Miss Mansey, that's what we called her, she used to collect dolls.
She did not.
Adam crossed his arms over his chest.
I don't believe you.
Without a word, Ryder leaned in and opened the door. The curtains were drawn, but there was enough light for Adam to see the pairs of eyes all arranged and staring at the door. He opened his mouth, closed it, and then snorted.
Wow.
Yeah, Ryder closed it and shuddered.
Someone said she started doing it in case there were children at a funeral, and they needed something to play with to take their minds off being sad. But, well, if your choice is a dead body or a room full of dolls. It was very possible that Ryder Waits and his wacky town had set the whole thing up. But something told Adam it was all genuine.
Must be why they got that television.
Ryder's grin was crooked and, ugh, adorable.
Right. Anyway, there's a bathroom up here at the end of the hall. Here's the room.
The bedroom was spacious. A large corner room full of windows, with a four-poster bed just like a bed and breakfast. The decor was very old lady Victorian chic, with cabbage rose wallpaper and fringe on the lamp. It straddled the edge of fussy, but it wasn't unbearable. And besides, he was only going to be sleeping there. Adam's eyes flickered up to Ryder as he put his bag down. Having the man in his bedroom was making him think about things he really shouldn't. Besides, he couldn't even consider fucking someone in a funeral home. That seemed about as cruelly out of place as that ticking clock downstairs, or that room full of creepy dolls. I can leave you to get settled and...
I'm fine. I'd like to see the distillery.
Adam faced Ryder and put a bit of firmness in his voice.
I'm not here to sabotage your business, Mr. Waits, but I am here on behalf of the company we both report to. So, while I can tell you're not too happy about this, we might as well get on board with my assignment so it goes as smoothly as possible.
Ryder's eyebrows went up. You get right to the point, don't you? All right, all right. The hint of good old boy charm vanished, and Ryder's voice was as serious as Adam's. I sold that recipe to Bluegrass because they were the only ones who didn't treat me like some backwoods hillbilly. Everyone else wanted to move the line to their distillery and out of Gallows Grove, and they laughed at me when I said I wanted the town on the Bourbon Trail.
You must not have told them about the doll room, said Adam. That seems like tourism waiting to happen.
Ryder was clearly not amused. I just want to make sure we're on the same page with the contract I signed. Adam wondered if Ryder had enlisted a lawyer to look at those contracts before he signed them, because Ryder's faith in Wood was, well, Adam knew you didn't get to be the third largest bourbon distributor in Kentucky by making nice with the locals.
I'm not making you any promises, because I'm not the man in charge. I'm simply here to make sure you follow the protocols required for your bourbon to be a part of our brand.
That was a spectacular way to avoid committing to what I just asked you.
You didn't ask, Adam said between gritted teeth. You told. Do you want to stand here and argue semantics, or should we go? The sooner I'm done with my work, the sooner I'm out of your hair.
He took a step toward the door. Evidently, he planned to leave the room with or without Ryder moving out of his way. Ryder gave him what could only be described as a thorough once-over, starting at the tip of Adam's conservatively cut hair and ending at his expensive, perfectly shined Kenneth Cole's.
Maybe I'm just not in a hurry to let you out of the bedroom, Adam.
Oh, so that was his plan, was it? Freak Adam out by being gay? Adam took a step until they were standing in each other's space.
You're not my type, Ryder, he lied through his teeth. Are we done here?
Ryder gave a slow, challenge-accepted smile. After you, he said, and stepped gallantly aside. Adam avoided looking at the door to the doll room on the way down the hallway. Ryder took the final curve in the road that led down to the distillery and checked his rear-view mirror to see if Adam was still behind him. The bastard had been practically tailgating him, but the roads were curvy, and he'd at least had the self-preservation to take it slower. Jesus, Mr. Lexington was hot. Ryder couldn't believe that Adam Keller, with his fancy suit and haircut and shiny, shiny shoes, was gay. But that little incident in the bedroom was pretty clear. He doubted Adam meant, you're not my type because you're not a woman. Besides, there'd been something there between them in that first glance, some kind of spark. Beneath the mistrust and the dislike, Ryder felt it, and he knew Adam did too. Good old-fashioned lust didn't require that you like each other. Ryder pulled in the gravel lot in front of the distillery and waited for Adam to park his BMW before climbing out of his car. The distillery was made up of structures of varying age and material, the oldest of which was a gray stone building that housed the original still. It had been converted into an office in the 60s, the last time anyone had done anything resembling renovations to the property. Here it is, said Ryder, and he couldn't keep the note of pride out of his voice. It was sort of a pain to be left in charge of his family's legacy, but that didn't make him love it any less.
You're going to need a lot of infrastructure work to accommodate a tour bus, was Adam's response.
Ryder dropped his polite smile. I know that. He turned on his heel and walked into the distillery. He tried not to stomp, but seriously. Mr. Killjoy really shouldn't be that attractive if he had the personality of a deflated balloon.
Rye, how did...
Oh, hello, Heather said as she stood up from her desk.
You must be the gentleman from Lexington.
She made it sound like the title of an old Gregory Peck film.
News travels fast, Adam said. I'm Adam Keller.
He shook hands with Heather as he introduced himself. Heather smiled with genuine pleasure, probably because Adam was so attractive. Ryder suddenly realized why Adam's last name seemed so familiar. Keller, from Lexington, as in Keller Horse Farms? Jesus Christ, if that was true, the guy was hot and loaded, and so out of Ryder's league it wasn't even funny. That was if they even liked each other to begin with. Oh well, it was for the best, really. That sort of dislike-to-lovers thing only happened in Harry Draco fanfic.
Do you keep these magazines around for shipping?
Adam asked, indicating the stacks of old People magazines with a wave of his hand. Ryder hadn't noticed he was holding an honest-to-God clipboard until he pulled a just-as-honest-to-God fountain pen out of his jacket pocket. Gregory Peck, indeed.
Well, no,
said Heather, sounding confused. She cleared her throat.
Mostly we just read them.
Adam very calmly picked up one of the magazines from the stack nearest to him.
This one is from 2012.
Heather clearly didn't know what to say to that, so she just shrugged and looked at Ryder. My aunt signed up for a subscription in 1988, Ryder explained. I think it's been automatically renewed every year since then. She's probably on some list of most loyal customers by now. Adam didn't look impressed by Eden's magazine fealty.
They're a fire hazard.
It's a stone building. Ryder didn't miss the flash of irritation in Adam's pretty blue eyes, or the way his full, made-for-sucking-cock mouth tightened at the corners.
Stone can still burn, Mr. Waits.
Oh, could it now? Speaking of burning, Ryder felt a completely inappropriate and ill-timed flare of desire, and his cock stirred. I'll see what I can do about that, Mr. Keller.
You can throw them away. That's what you can do about it.
Even though he'd thought the same thing about the outdated magazines not 2 hours earlier, Ryder had the childish urge to say, make me, and stick his tongue out. Instead, he jerked his head toward the back door. Let's go see the still. Heather gave him a poignant look as Adam disappeared through the doorway.
Don't, said Ryder.
He sighed and gave a look around.
Heather, could you...
I'll take care of him, Rye,
she said, and he gave her a grateful smile as he headed out after Adam. The still was in a larger brick building a few feet away from the office, and the majority of the space was taken up by the wooden mash vats and Ryder's uncle, who was clearly not pleased at the interruption.
Who the hell are you?
My name is Adam Keller, said Adam. I'm from... His uncle's deep baritone cut Adam off at the pass.
Not interested. Get out.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Ryder walked in and cleared his throat. This is, our bourbon master, Zeno Waits. Zeno crossed his arms over his chest and turned his glare on Ryder.
You know how I feel about visitors, boy.
Ryder really wished his uncle wouldn't call him boy, as though he were 12, but it would do no good to say anything about it. I know, but Mr. Keller is from Bluegrass Bourbon. They're going to be distributing Hanged Man, so he's here to take a look around. This explanation was for Adam's benefit, though Ryder didn't know why he bothered. Zeno knew who Adam was and why he was there, and Adam could probably tell Zeno was displeased by both of those things. Adam opened his mouth, likely to repeat in his robotic fashion that, I am here to make observations and implement company policies, and Ryder decided it was best to move the tour along. We'll set up a time for y'all to talk. Okay, Zeno? I'm just showing him around right now. Zeno grumbled something that sounded like,
fine,
and then waved his hands.
Now get, go on, Don't need you fussing around in here.
Ryder gestured to the door at the far end of the still, indicating to Adam that they should leave. Adam gave him a droll look and a polite nod to Zeno, who completely ignored his,
"I look forward to speaking with you,"
and went back to work.
"You two must be related," said Adam, as they moved toward the warehouse where the barrels were stored.
"What gave it away?" Ryder asked. "The eyes?"
"The charm," Adam said, deadpan, and Ryder gave a genuine laugh as he opened the warehouse door.
Even though Ryder hated having Adam there, and hated everything that could go wrong with the deal he'd made, Adam did know his bourbon. He asked the right questions about the conditions for storing the barrels, the sanitizing procedures for bottling, and the method of transferring the necessary ingredients to the still. Hanged Man was sold locally and in a few stores in Lexington. Ryder's grandfather had made some word-of-mouth agreement with a small distribution company before Ryder's mother was even born. A few years earlier, that company decided it wasn't worth the effort to drive out to Gallows Grove to pick up the bottles, so Ryder loaded his car and dropped off crates of bourbon personally, which, he learned to his chagrin, was totally illegal. As things became more and more computerized, payment logistics became a nightmare, and a lot of the little stores that used to sell Hanged Man had been absorbed by corporations that didn't like to do business with some guy pulling up on a Wednesday afternoon and trying to sell whiskey out of his hatchback. The longer they talked, the more nervous Ryder became. Adam was making an awful lot of notes and saying things under his breath about installing this and repairing that. And by the time they were in the bottling facility, and Ryder had explained the whole thing about the crates in the back of his car and almost getting himself arrested, he was starting to feel as though he really were a dumb hillbilly. Some of the questions Adam asked, Ryder didn't even know how to answer. That probably wasn't good.
"So, if all our equipment is so outdated, what are they going to do? Build us a whole new distillery?"
Ryder asked, trying to sound as if he were joking, even though they both knew he wasn't. Ryder was in way over his head, and it wasn't 1934. Businesses needed computers and contracts and federal tax ID numbers, not just handshakes and promises. Adam flipped a page on his clipboard and didn't even bother to look at Ryder as he answered.
"No. As per the contract you signed, if restoration and renovation efforts are cost prohibitive, then the brand will be produced in the central location in Lexington."
"The hell it will," Ryder snapped as the dread sharpened and turned into daggers of pure anger. "The only reason I signed that contract was because they promised not to do that." Adam did look up at him then.
"Did you have a lawyer look at the contracts, or did you just read them over yourself?"
Bile rose in Ryder's throat, and his heart slammed against his chest, though part of his reaction was the slow burn of shame about his education, or lack thereof. College hadn't even been an option, not with trying to keep the distillery afloat.
"I don't have a fancy degree, but I know how to read."
Adam put a hand up to stop Ryder mid-tirade.
"Normal people don't read contracts like lawyers read contracts. I'm not insulting your intelligence, and it has nothing to do with where you're from or what degree you do or don't have. I'm saying it because I don't think you fully understood the implications of the deal before you made it. Yes, every reasonable effort will be made to restore the distillery to its potential, as long as the facilities are up to code. What did you think would happen if they weren't?"
"I thought that's what I sold the recipe to goddamn Bluegrass for." Ryder shoved his hands through his hair. "That they'd make sure it was up to code to produce it in larger quantities."
"They will make a reasonable effort to see that it is."
Adam paused.
"It's not the same thing as doing whatever it takes."
"But..."
"Ryder," Adam said, and his voice was a little quieter. "Do you even have a lawyer?"
Ryder's face was hot, because somehow Adam's concern was worse than him being a smug robot.
"We've got Willie," he muttered.
"Do I need a lawyer, Adam?"
"If you think you can negotiate your way out of this contract, you need about 7 of them."
Adam frowned.
You sold what amounts to intellectual property rights to Bluegrass, which is going to make...
If you say a reasonable effort one more time, I'm going to hit you.
Adam's mouth tightened.
It's not my fault you didn't have a lawyer at least glance at this contract. But the upshot is, yes, if this proves too expensive of an undertaking, then Bluegrass will simply move operations to Lexington and sell your bourbon as a house line. The recipe won't be changed.
Of course it will, Ryder interrupted. You know as well as I do that you take our barrels out of our warehouse, you take our corn and our water out of the equation, you change the whiskey.
We have limestone water and corn in Lexington. It's still Kentucky bourbon, Ryder.
But it's not hanged man bourbon, Ryder growled. He was shaking, unable to believe what he was hearing.
So, how much is too much before they throw up their hands and make my whiskey somewhere else? Am I allowed to know that? What's the magic number, Adam?
Adam went back to robot mode.
That's up to the discretion of the finance office and chief financial officer, based on the reports they receive.
Your reports, you mean?
Ryder crossed his arms and struggled to keep his voice even.
That's what you're here to do, to see if this place is too expensive to bother with.
I told you. I'm here to make sure the transition is smooth and that you're in compliance with company protocols, as well as to determine the necessary steps to get you up to code.
And if that's too much?
Adam sighed. He looked down at his paper and tapped his pen gently against the wood of his clipboard.
Then we'll produce the bourbon in-house in Lexington. I thought you knew that.
He looked, if not upset, at least genuine enough in his confusion to make Ryder cool off a little.
Seven lawyers, huh?
Fine. I'll find them.
Ryder raised his chin. He had no idea how to go about finding one lawyer, much less seven.
Look up bourbon lawyer in the phone book?
No. The internet. You could find anything there.
You won't know what the decision is for at least a couple of months after my reports are filed, Ryder. So I'd hold out on the lawyers. In the meantime, I would appreciate it if you didn't stop me from doing my job.
Ryder smiled sweetly at him. I'll make a reasonable effort. How's that? Adam didn't seem to find that funny, but it wasn't actually a joke. Adam lay in bed, staring up at the ceiling with his hands behind his head. He had no idea what he was going to do. It never occurred to him that Ryder wouldn't have a lawyer look over his contract. It had never occurred to him that Wood wouldn't have suggested he do that, just to be sure nothing came back to bite him on the ass, legally speaking. Adam knew that Wood was under absolutely no obligation to make sure that Ryder understood the particular legalities of the deal he'd made with Bluegrass, but he didn't want to think Wood had deliberately tried to pull one over on Ryder either. It had never occurred to Adam that Ryder didn't realize that moving the line was a very real possibility. But the genuine look of shock on his face, when he finally understood, made Adam feel guilty. Probably because you want to fuck him. And God, did he. The things he wanted to do to Ryder. Even when he stood there with his chin tilted and declared he was going to find seven lawyers to save his precious still. That made him think about the contract again. Adam tossed the blankets back, got out of bed, reached for the bedside, and pulled the little dangling chain that attached to the lamp. It turned on, but the shade, pink with matching tassels, was such a heavy fabric that all it did was throw a muted light into the room. It was hardly better than the moonlight. He went to the small desk in the room to retrieve his laptop, determined to send a few emails and take a look at that contract for himself. Not that he could do anything about Ryder's contract. Bluegrass had lawyers that could dismantle his family's horse empire if they wanted. But he did want to take a look at the specifics. Just to see. He was halfway back to the bed when he heard the clock. Wait. That couldn't be the clock from downstairs, could it? That was impossible. Unless the walls were made of paper. Besides, he'd eaten dinner in the kitchen downstairs and hadn't noticed it. At least, he didn't think he had. but it was impossible to miss the insistent tick, tick, tick that reminded him of the ornate grandfather clocks at his parents' palatial home in Lexington. Uneasy, Adam put his laptop down on his bed, padded over to the door, opened it reluctantly, and stepped into the dimly lit hallway. He could hear the clock even louder, and he moved silently to identify where it was coming from. It almost sounded like it was coming from everywhere. Adam didn't believe in ghosts. He definitely didn't believe in ghost clocks. But he did believe that Rider-Waite would do whatever it took to keep his whiskey distilled in Gallows Grove, and that included gaslighting the rep from Bluegrass until he thought he was crazy and fled the town in mortal terror. It was cheaper than hiring 7 lawyers, that's for sure. His eyes flickered toward the door to the doll room. If there was a clock in there, it could tick itself into eternity for all Adam cared. He wasn't going in. He didn't need to believe in ghosts to find that room creepy as fuck. The sound had to be Ryder's handiwork. But then again, he'd been with Ryder all day, hadn't he? Of course, Ryder could have snuck in just minutes before, but that was stupid. Adam had heard the clock earlier that day. It had to be the same one, and he was just noticing it because he was trying to sleep. Annoyed, Adam marched back to his bedroom and closed the door. He resolutely climbed back into bed and turned off the frilly lamp. He could still hear the sound. Tick, tick, tick. Adam flailed his hand out and grabbed his phone and earbuds from the table. He jammed the little buds into his ears and turned on a podcast, tuning out the incessant sound of the clock. Adam pointedly didn't mention the magazine-free office when he met Ryder at the distillery the next morning. The office had also been swept and dusted, and all the surfaces gleamed with furniture polish. Even the filing cabinets. The scent of fake lemon was nearly overwhelming. Citrus was supposed to be refreshing, not stifling. Jesus. Had Ryder told his staff that the distillery was in dire straits, and only a thorough application of furniture polish could save it? Heather, the office manager, wasn't there when Adam and Ryder sat down to go over the first part of the evolution process. The table was so slick from polish that Adam's bottle of water moved on its own. Ryder looked just as attractive as he had the day before, with his coal black hair slicked back off his face so Adam could easily see his eyes. Heterochromia. He'd looked that up when he got back to his room, because he couldn't remember what it was called. It was an unusual condition, but it suited Ryder, who looked like he belonged in the hip area around the university in Lexington, not in a backwater town with a creepy name and a funeral house full of sightless dolls. The scent of the orange cleaner was giving Adam a hell of a headache, and it was only 9:30. They'd been talking about infrastructure and going over a stack of the worst-kept records Adam had ever seen, when Ryder said, "Hey, I'm sorry if I was an asshole yesterday." Adam eyed him suspiciously, thinking about the clock. He wondered if he should apologize for his own brusqueness, but he'd only been doing his job. That's how he was all the time, anyway. "Okay." Ryder's mouth quirked up. "It's not your fault I didn't, like, I just wanted to do the right thing, you know?" He looked very young suddenly, vulnerable and tired. And Adam really didn't think he'd pulled any kind of stunt with the clock. "I thought I did something that would help, and I... If they move the production out of this distillery... Most people in town don't work here, though, do they?" Adam asked. He realized that wasn't very comforting, but he'd never been good at comfort. "I mean, you're not single-handedly responsible for Gallows Grove, Ryder." Ryder gave an unhappy little laugh. "No, I know. But this distillery, my family's been in charge since this damn town was founded, and I can't stand the thought of losing the one thing that still makes us any money. And I really think, if the town gets on the bourbon trail, it could revitalize the whole place." He fiddled with the pen he was holding, and then made a face. "I overdid it on the furniture polish, huh?" Adam smiled. "A little." Ryder's face brightened. "Hey. Let's get out of here. I'll give you a tour, and you can see just how cool this town really is." He jumped to his feet and headed over to the coffee pot that neither of them had touched. "I'll make us some coffee, and we'll go for a walk. That'll give the office time to, air out." Adam didn't know what to say, but he hated to put a stop to Ryder's sudden enthusiasm and apparent friendliness, even if he was half convinced it was a stall tactic. But what good would stalling do either of them? Unless Ryder thought that Adam would find the town so charming he'd, what, lie on the reports? That was stupid. He'd never do that. Ryder had to understand that Adam's job was based on numbers and facts, not personal feelings. Maybe if Adam humored him, Ryder would let him get things wrapped up and let him conduct the rest of his business. He still needed to talk to Zeno Waits, though he would definitely prefer Ryder's company to his uncle's. Ryder had already stood up and was pouring his coffee from the plain, utilitarian coffee mug into a styrofoam cup, affixing a lid to it, and then making one for Adam, too. "You want cream or sugar?" Ryder asked. He put so much of both in his coffee that Adam wondered if he were a regular drinker or not. "Just black." Adam carefully affixed the lid to his cup and took a sip. It was good. He took another sip. It was damn good. He'd avoided the coffee for bottled water he brought with him, because if there was one thing he was a bit of a snob about, it was coffee. "What blend is this?" Ryder picked up the large container, which proclaimed it to be no more exotic than Folger's. "The regular kind, I guess. I'm not really a coffee drinker." That was evident from the sheer amount of crap he put into it, but Adam kept that observation to himself. There was no way it was just Folger's, though. He'd have to get a look another time. "For not drinking coffee, you make a hell of a pot." Ryder gave his easy smile and headed to the door. "We all got talents, Adam. I guess if my bourbon business closes up, I can get a job at the diner." Adam didn't argue that the business wasn't closing, it would just be moving. It was clear that, to Ryder, it was the same thing. Adam climbed into the passenger seat of Ryder's car, settled in with his coffee, and got ready for the tour. So, Gallows Grove used to be called something else, which I'm sure isn't a surprise. Ryder honked the horn at the driver of a Chevy C10 pickup, a classic turquoise blue model that looked vaguely 70s-ish that was turning into the lot. "My uncle," said Ryder, as he pulled onto the main road from the distillery's gravel lot. Anyway, the town used to be called Coleman, and they were going to flood it when they dammed up the Little Sandy, so they relocated everyone. Except that was in 1913, and then there was a world war and priorities changed. They didn't end up damming the Little Sandy until the 1960s, when they made Grayson Lake. Adam nodded. That sounded vaguely familiar, and he knew Grayson was fairly close to Gallows Grove. So, Coleman was basically this abandoned town, and it stayed that way, because it wasn't even much of a town to begin with. Just a few businesses and houses. The funeral home was the nicest, and one of the few still around. And even the people who lived there before didn't care enough to come back, so it was sort of forgotten. Anyway, when Prohibition hit, some enterprising bootleggers came across it and decided it was the perfect front for running booze. They could pretend it was just another town, and the businesses, the drugstore, the post office, whatever, were exactly what they said on the signs. Only, in reality, they weren't anything of the sort. The distillery is out here, kind of hidden from sight, as you noticed, so they drive these back roads in the middle of the night and load the booze in the businesses, and they'd conduct illicit alcohol sales sometimes in the middle of the day. Because the town didn't technically exist, no one bothered to check on it. And if any of the revenue men happened by, all they saw was a tiny little podunk Kentucky town with a real popular post office. Adam couldn't help his rueful laugh.
"Clever."
Ryder looked pleased. "Right? Anyway, those are my ancestors. People trying to pull one over on the law while running booze. Well, they say three can keep a secret if two are dead, and that's morbid, but probably true. At some point, someone got jealous, and someone else got ripped off, and the revenue men started sniffing around, looking for proof that this town was nothing more than a front for bootleggers. So the only thing to do to throw off suspicion
was make it an actual town,
Adam answered. And yeah, okay, he couldn't help it. That was a pretty charming story, even if he didn't believe a word of it.
Right. So the people knew that if they got caught, they'd all swing. There's this big grove of trees by the park, I'll show you, and that's where they figured they'd end up if they didn't do something, fast. So they got together, wrote up a town charter, and had it signed and everything. Rumor has it one of the bootleggers had an in with the county commissioner or something. Probably he was providing him with booze, but I like to think it was blowjobs. Ryder gave him a sly smile, and Adam shifted imperceptibly in his seat. Anyway, they drew up a town charter, had the commissioner sign it, and had it ready for the sting they knew was coming. When the law showed up, they proudly presented the town charter for Gallows Grove, Kentucky. Legend has it, they were all standing there, right in the middle of that grove of trees when the law showed up. Adam shook his head. This all sounded completely made up, like something in a television show.
Is any of it true?
The basic story, yeah. It's true enough, though I don't really buy the part about everything happening at the last second, because the government ain't usually that quick to act. Ryder said as he swung the car onto a road that led to the heart of downtown. If you don't believe me, we can stop by City Hall, and you can see the charter for yourself. It's in a frame and everything, and supposedly the date is backdated prior to the law showing up, but who knows. Obviously, by the time the law figured out they'd been had, Prohibition was history, and the revenue men were hitting the bar like the rest of the town.
So your family owned the still that was out in the woods?
Yep. If you look on that charter, the third name down from the top is Waits. Ryder smiled in obvious pleasure as he guided the car into a parking space. They were in what appeared to be a park at the dead center of town, just like in a movie. I remember the first time my mom took me to see that. I'd been asking her questions about my dad, I guess, since I just figured out that most people had their dad's last name and not their mom's. And my dad was gone long before I was born. But she told me, even if he hadn't taken off, she still would have named me Waits. There was such pride in his voice. Adam had a vaunted family name that was deeply connected to Lexington, but he never sounded like that. Most of the time, he hated it whenever anyone put two and two together and figured out he was one of those Kellers.
"Does your mom still live around here?"
Adam asked carefully, because he had a feeling he knew the answer. "She died when I was 15. Breast cancer." Even though he suspected, he still didn't know what to say.
"I'm sorry."
"Thanks." She loved this town, and in addition to doing tarot readings and making people teas, she worked at the distillery. She ran the office and helped my uncle distill the bourbon. Ryder got out of the car and stretched. Adam took one last drink of his truly superb coffee, stashed the cup in the cup holder, and opened the door. It was a nice day, with a crisp breeze and a bright blue sky, and the sun warm enough to keep the chill away. As they walked, Ryder pointed out buildings. My mom always called that one the old cat house, and I didn't get it. I thought it meant there was a store full of kittens, and I felt cheated it was the drugstore. And he told him anecdotes of small-town life that had a bit of a macabre twist. They were fond of playing off the gallows theme, with names like the trap door for the bar and the rusty nail for the hardware store. Ryder's town history was a cross between an episode of A Prairie Home Companion and Welcome to Night Vale. After their walk, they headed to the Last Meal Diner. Ryder just shrugged when Adam gave him an incredulous look at the name, and sat down for a late breakfast slash early lunch. "So, tell me about yourself, Mr. Keller," said Ryder, all easy charm and his drawl in place.
"I'd really rather not."
Adam sipped the fresh coffee the waitress, Vera, poured for them. It was as delicious as the pot in Ryder's office, maybe even more so.
"Forget the bourbon. Your town should be selling your coffee."
Vera beamed at him.
"Oh, see, that's..."
"Very nice of you to say," Ryder interrupted, giving the waitress a side-eyed look.
"Humph."
She turned without pouring Ryder any more coffee and walked off, muttering, "Anyway, we were talking about you, not coffee. Tell me, is Keller any relation to the Kellers, as in the horse people? You said you were from Lexington, so I figured, but maybe I'm wrong." Adam hated this part.
"Yeah, that's my family."
Ryder's strange, mismatched eyes widened. "I didn't think anyone in that family would have to..." He cleared his throat. "Wow, manners. Sorry."
"You didn't figure their kid would need to work."
Adam had heard that before. "Guilty," said Ryder. Adam thought it might not be a good idea to go around saying the word guilty out loud in this town.
"My father is very involved in the legal side, of course. My mother does a lot of charitable foundation work. Idleness wasn't encouraged in my house."
"Siblings?" Adam nodded.
"Two brothers. One older, one younger. One's in law school, and the other is involved in the equestrian management side of things. He actually likes horses."
"And you don't?" Adam sipped his coffee as the waitress came back with their food, more coffee, and iced tea for Ryder.
"No way. One stepped on my foot."
"Wait. What?" Ryder looked up from his breakfast. "A horse?"
"They're heavy. Stallions."
Ryder's smile turned into a leer. He winked. "Right. I hear they're a hell of a ride." Adam hastily forked up a bite of his food. He felt stupid at having shared that, but he'd been a kid, and the horse was 1,000 times bigger than him and had refused to move. He'd broken 4 bones in his foot and worn a cast for 6 weeks, and he'd never been able to stand horses since then. "I stubbed my toe on a 4-wheeler," Ryder offered, "and one time I fell off my big wheel as a kid." Adam couldn't quite help the involuntary smile. He tried to ignore how attractive Ryder was, sitting in the sun in the window of a macabre-themed diner, looking at Adam as if he were trying to learn how to take him apart. The amicable spirit of goodwill and cooperation between Ryder and Adam lasted until mid-evening, when they got down to the nitty-gritty of discussing the business of bourbon. Adam, who'd smiled a few times and shown a hint of personality, went back to robot mode as they talked about the details of the distillery. It was frustrating, because it made him really boring, and Ryder didn't want to sleep with boring people. He definitely wanted to sleep with Adam, though. Especially after that tour of the town, which was Ryder's attempt to tug at his heartstrings and give a human side to the town and its admittedly strange residents. Heartstrings were not what Heather thought he should be tugging.
"Ryder, that man is hot and gay, and you need to seduce him."
Ryder tried to seduce Adam with the town, but other than being excited by the coffee, that hadn't seemed to work very well. Though, at some point, Ryder was going to have to come clean about the real reason why the coffee was so good. But not yet. It was his last trump card, the real reason why you couldn't make Gallows Grove whiskey anywhere but Gallows Grove, and he had to use it strategically, like that one angry bird that was a bomb, and you only got one of them per game.
"You'll have to conform to company standards for recycling and packaging," droned Adam.
Ryder finally had enough.
"Do you have any hobbies besides hating horses and doing work?"
Adam blinked at him.
"We're talking about environmental standards and waste disposal, not my hobbies."
"Oh my God," said Ryder.
"Don't you ever stop talking like that." "Not when I'm at work."
Adam had a scowl between his brows.
"If you find this so tedious, just express your interest to move your house line to Lexington, and I can leave. If not, then we're going to have to go over this checklist, and you're going to have to come up with a waste management plan."
"They sent you to bore me into giving you my still along with my recipe, didn't they?" The second he said it, Ryder felt bad. He saw the brief flash of hurt in Adam's eyes, and he chastised himself for being an ass. Adam went back to his checklist, and Ryder made an effort to care about the correct type of fencing around a dumpster. The small office grew dark as the sun faded. The grove of trees around the distillery made it seem darker outside than it was. The sun was strangled by the dying autumn leaves and thwarted by windows that were badly in need of replacement and grimy from years of use in a way that no Windex could ever clean. When he couldn't take the shop talk anymore, Ryder decided it was time to stop working for the day. "You want to go get a drink?"
"We're sitting in a distillery," said Adam, as though somehow Ryder had forgotten.
"Yes, thank you. Would you like to partake of the whiskey, or does drinking fuck up your mechanical insides?" Adam did not appear amused.
"I like bourbon. I am from Kentucky, you know."
"Some people don't like it," he shrugged. "Plenty round here, even. Some Baptists. You know how they are."
"Yeah. They say they don't like it on Sunday, and go home and drink it while engaging in deviant sex and signing up for Obamacare."
Ryder threw his head back and laughed. "Oh my God, that was actually funny. And true. I mean, we've got some normal Baptists who just hate everything and don't have fun, even in secret. But ugh." He raised his eyebrows. "Deviant sex acts, huh?" Adam cleared his throat.
"You know."
"Yeah," Ryder grinned.
"I do."
"Let's have some bourbon. I'll even share the good stuff." Adam eyed him suspiciously, and then surprised Ryder by shrugging.
"Why not?"
"Excellent." Ryder spent a long time selecting what he believed to be the perfect bourbon from a fairly impressive collection. He wanted something that would wow Adam, but not give the farm away, so to speak. In the end, he grabbed a 10-year double oak barrel that was a particular favorite, procured 2 glasses, and, after making sure they weren't dusty, poured them both a hefty amount. "Did you want any ice?"
"Give me some credit," said Adam,
as he took his glass and brought it to his mouth. His very nice, sort of pouty mouth. Ryder's fingers were curled around his tumbler, and he tried to keep his breathing even as Adam took a drink of his bourbon. The expression on his face was one of pure pleasure, and seeing it was doing things to Ryder, namely to his dick.
"Oh, wow."
Adam sipped again, eyes still closed.
"Okay, this is... wow."
"Told you," Ryder said, smugly, and sipped his own drink. He let the flavor of the bourbon dance on his tongue before he swallowed. He should have skipped the nostalgia tour and gone straight to the goddamn whiskey. "Idiot," sang a generation of his ancestors.
"No, you told me about the town and the distillery. You did not tell me about the bourbon."
Adam gave him a sharp stare.
"This is really good."
"It's not even the best one," Ryder informed him. "I'm saving that for when we get that spot on the bourbon trail. Then I'll pour you a glass and really wow you." Adam smiled at him, and it transformed his face from hot to unbelievably ball-tighteningly hot.
"You should have been plying me with liquor from the moment I got here."
"Or sex." "It was like 10:30 in the morning. We have standards." Ryder poured more of the bourbon into Adam's glass. "But it's bourbon o'clock now, so drink up."
"Speaking of clocks," Adam said, and then stopped. "Never mind."
"No, what?" Ryder gazed thoughtfully at him. They'd missed dinner, and the small amount of bourbon was settling warmly in his stomach, giving him a pleasant buzz that was dulling the edges of his worry and mistrust, and making it seem like a really good idea to take Adam home with him. No, he couldn't do that. He wanted to, but he couldn't. As they drank, Ryder's resolve began to go up in flames, just like those stacks of magazines they'd incinerated the day before. Hell, why shouldn't he see if Adam was up for some no-string sex? It's not like Ryder had much of an opportunity to hook up around Gallows Grove. Ryder tossed back the rest of his whiskey, ignored the gasp from Adam and the weight of ancestral disapproval at shooting good bourbon, and stood up. "Look, Adam, I don't like this situation, but it's not personal or anything. Even if I think you're kinda stuffy." Adam peered at him. He didn't seem that sober either. There was a lot missing in that bottle.
"Damn. Why did you have to stand up and tell me that?
Because it felt like he was issuing a proclamation, and drinking logic necessitated you stand up for those. Can we be done with work for the day?
I thought that's what getting drunk meant, said Adam.
Ryder threw his hands up in the air. I don't want to do business, because I want us to fuck. There. That should make Mr. Calm, cool, and collected. And bury his face in his hands?
Oh, God.
Ryder sat down, eyes wide, and wondering if it was karmic punishment for downing 10-year-old double barrel as though it were water.
I can't, Adam wailed, sounding miserable.
He peeked up at Ryder.
Ugh, you are so hot. Like, I can't. If there were any other gay men here, you'd probably never look twice at me. Admit it.
Ryder stared at him. That's totally not true. It was your personality that was stopping me until now. Adam leaned back in his seat and slouched like a champ, looking sulky and attractive, and like he needed more whiskey. And Ryder on his lap.
I know I'm not any fun, believe me.
Well, I am, so maybe I can show you a thing or two. Adam continued to look miserable, so Ryder sat back down and huffily grabbed the bottle. If the whiskey couldn't help him get laid, it could sure as hell help him get over being rejected. If you're not interested, just say so.
I said you were hot, Adam mumbled. Of course I'm interested, but it's such a bad idea.
This town was founded on bad ideas. Ryder seductively ran a finger around the edge of his glass and winked. Worked out okay so far. Adam watched with a hungry expression as Ryder's finger slid across the glass.
I can't let it influence my job.
Sure you can. That's not what this is about. Mostly. No. Okay. It was about Ryder wanting to get laid, but maybe if it helped. Except he already knew it wouldn't. But that didn't make Ryder want to jump Adam any less.
I know, okay? I'm not trying to seduce you because of dumpster regulations, Adam. I just think you're hot and I want to bone. You don't have to sell me on the idea, said Adam. I want to. I have since I saw you. But I just... Hell.
He too garnered ancestral disapproval, his own maybe, along with Ryder's, and threw back the whiskey.
I'm not fucking in the ever-after funeral home. Hard limit.
Ryder got up, moved around the table, and pushed his way into Adam's space. He climbed on his lap and settled his weight on Adam's. It felt so good that he tossed his head back and moaned.
Fuck. Fuck.
Adam chanted, and he surprised Ryder by grabbing hard at the back of his neck and pulling him into a deep, thorough kiss. Ryder had figured he'd be the one in charge of things, but Adam was quickly taking over, and goddamn, that was hot. Ryder kissed him back just as heatedly and shifted so they could rub against each other like teenagers. Adam's body was hard and firm beneath his hands, and Ryder tried to undo the buttons of Adam's shirt as quickly as possible. Adam lost the tie and suit jacket. Ryder was glad, because he didn't think he could deal with all that fabric barring his way. Adam's skin was hot to the touch, and he had dark hair on his chest. Not too much, but enough. Perfect. Ryder's mouth was on his neck, sucking and nipping. He felt like he was giving a lap dance with the bump and grind, but he didn't care.
You smell good, he mumbled, and licked at the corded muscles of Adam's neck.
Adam moved quickly and deposited Ryder on the table. He was all flushed and breathing hard, disheveled, and staring at Ryder as though he were the dinner they'd forgotten to eat. He shoved Ryder's Henley up, and Ryder helped him take it off.
Your aggressiveness is hot, he told Adam, in case you're worried that I don't like it.
Adam glanced at Ryder's crotch and then back up at him.
I can tell you like it.
He reached down for Ryder's belt and fumbled to get it off.
Fuck, I want to suck you.
Jesus. Ryder's hips went up as he tried to help Adam with the belt.
I want you to suck me.
Adam leaned down and kissed him so hard his teeth nipped playfully at Ryder's mouth. Ryder didn't care. He just arched and wiggled until his jeans were down and his cock was free at last. Adam was like a man possessed as he bit his way down Ryder's chest and paused at the tattoo above his heart, concentric circles with various symbols inked around them. He raised his head, a question in his eyes, but Ryder grabbed him by the back of the neck and pulled his head back down. "It's a tarot card. I'll explain later. Back to sex." Adam's mouth slid over Ryder's cock, and Ryder's eyes rolled back in his head at how good it felt. It had been a long time since that trip to Lexington, where he'd hooked up with a pretty boy in a club bathroom just because he'd looked like Draco Malfoy. Either that, or he wore a Slytherin t-shirt and was blonde. Close enough. This wasn't going to last long, which was a damn shame. Ryder panted and moaned up at the ceiling, while Adam's mouth slid along his cock. His tongue flickered lightly, and his hand worked what he couldn't get with his mouth. Ryder didn't want to come embarrassingly fast, but there was really no hope for it. Adam was apparently as thorough at sucking cock as he was at annoying Ryder with business matters. He tried, fingers gripping hard at Adam's perfectly styled hair. Adam looked up at him, his eyes watering slightly from deep-throating Ryder's cock, and he gave one last hard suck before he finished Ryder off with his hand and watched Ryder come with a hungry expression. It left Ryder feeling worn out when it was over, a little buzzed, and wondering vaguely if he should apologize for how fast it was. He also wanted to do the same thing right back to Adam, as soon as his limbs re-solidified from their present jelly-like consistency. He'd come all over his stomach, but whatever. Ryder took a minute to finish catching his breath, used his shirt to clean himself up, and then sat up on the table and slid carefully down so he could kneel in front of Adam.
"Isn't the floor hard?" Adam asked courteously.
Ryder put his hands on Adam's thighs and looked up at him with an irritated expression. "Aren't you, you know, harder?" Adam cleared his throat.
"I just didn't want you to be uncomfortable."
Ignoring that, Ryder reached his hand out and rubbed it over Adam's erection through his pants. Then he started to unbutton them. "Trust me, I'm comfortable being on my knees for a hot guy." Adam made a sound and shifted around.
"I have to sit down or I'll probably fall over."
Ryder shuffled forward and followed Adam as Adam sank gracefully into a chair. He positioned himself between Adam's knees and went back to the task at hand, or mouth, and got Adam's pants pushed out of his way. Adam had a nice cock, and Ryder had forgotten how much he liked sucking guys off, especially hot ones who were wearing dress shirts and making soft, quiet noises while grabbing hard at his hair. Adam was also a talker, which, for some reason, Ryder hadn't expected. And he was good at it, too, which was maybe even more surprising.
"You're so hot. God, look at you. Sucking my cock. Yeah. Fuck. Look at me. I want to see you."
Damn if Ryder wasn't getting hard again from Adam's throaty, low voice, and how apparently being bossed around was totally doing it for him. Ryder sucked Adam with enthusiasm, slightly miffed that it was taking Adam longer to get off than it had Ryder. But it was obvious that Adam enjoyed it, and didn't want it to be over so fast. Because Adam told him so.
"Slow down," Adam said bossily. "Use your hand."
"You always this into giving orders?" Ryder asked, obligingly fisting Adam's cock and watching as Adam's hands tightened on the arms of the chair.
"I like being in control of things," said Adam.
His voice was breathless, as though he were running and trying to have a conversation at the same time. Or rather, how Ryder sounded when he was running. Adam probably ran marathons for fun and controlled his breathing like some kind of marathon runner.
"You like being in control? I'm so surprised," Ryder murmured.
Then he leaned down and licked at the head of Adam's cock.
"Suck me,"
said Adam, and Ryder complied and slid his mouth down to take Adam deep. Adam kept up a filthy monologue, telling Ryder how good his mouth felt, how hot he looked sucking dick, and continually telling him to use his tongue, go faster, suck him deeper,
It was maybe the hottest blowjob Ryder had ever given in his life, and he wouldn't have minded swallowing. But if Adam made him come on his own stomach, then Ryder wanted to see Adam come all over that starched dress shirt of his. It was a little awkward afterward, watching Adam scowl as he tried to do something about the stain on his shirt with the handful of damp paper towels Ryder gave him.
"Is there a dry cleaner in this town?"
he asked, as he scrubbed so hard that bits of the cheap paper towel came off onto the soft cotton. Ryder snickered. "Seriously?" Adam looked up, his usual stern features relaxed into an honest-to-God grin. It was even a little crooked.
"No, but I bet it would have some kind of morbid name."
"The laundromat is called the Perfect Grime," Ryder informed him. Adam threw his head back and laughed. The sound was relaxed, rich, and warm, and it did things to Ryder's equilibrium that not even the best bottle of whiskey in the entire distillery could manage to do.
"Fuck. You could call the dry cleaners the Iron Maiden," Adam suggested,
and it was Ryder's turn to laugh. "Or something like Suds and Death?" Adam laughed again. They smiled at each other. Exchanging blowjobs was one thing, but puns? That could lead to dangerous, liking each other territory. And Ryder wasn't sure how he felt about that, because Adam Keller wasn't someone he could get involved with. He was from Lexington, he was in the closet, at least Ryder was assuming he was, and he had a rich family who owned a horse farm. Not to mention the potential for a messy tangle of complications, thanks to their business relationships. But fuck, it had felt so goddamn good to get laid. And those had been some pretty good puns.
"You want to grab some dinner?"
Ryder attempted casually as they left the distillery. He wasn't drunk anymore, and while he could have easily gone home and flopped down on the couch, he should probably eat something. Possibly he wasn't ready to say goodnight to Adam yet either.
"I need to change clothes," Adam said, "or stop by the Perfect Grime."
His mouth twitched. He was so cute when he smiled. Ryder wanted to climb into a bourbon barrel and not come out until he forgot that he'd even thought that. He really shouldn't have done that. Adam stood in his bathroom and stared at himself in the sink. Other than some slightly messier than usual hair, he didn't look at all like he'd just had sex on the clock. His face flushed, and his eyes dilated as he thought about that blowjob, and his cock, which hadn't gotten the memo that sex was done for the day, started to get hard. Apparently he had some kind of kink about fucking at work. Who knew? "Or maybe," a little voice said, "maybe it's just Ryder." Adam washed his face, went back into the bathroom, and methodically shucked his shoes and took off his shirt. He hung everything up, dressed in jeans and a lightweight sweater, and then went to find Ryder. Ryder was waiting for him in the funeral parlor proper, which was good. If he'd gone upstairs with him, Adam was worried they might have... Well, wait. No. He wasn't fucking there. No way. Thankfully, his cock behaved itself at the thought, but it was probably only the idea of dead people that kept him from getting hard, because goddamn, he wanted to take Ryder to bed and fuck him senseless. Somewhere else. He found Ryder looking at that damned loud clock and frowning at it as though it confused him.
"The little hand tells you the hour," Adam offered.
"Thanks." Ryder was still peering at it. "I think my uncle fixed this one."
"You have an uncle who fixes clocks?"
"I only have the one uncle," Ryder said. He turned and gave Adam a thorough and hopefully appreciative once-over. "Zeno. He fixes clocks as a hobby."
"Everyone here is weird," Adam said succinctly.
He thought about asking if Zeno could fix the damn thing so it wasn't so loud, but decided not to. It had to have been his imagination. It wasn't all that loud at the moment.
"That's the truth."
Ryder ran a hand through his hair and pushed it off his face. He needed a haircut, or one of those elastic ponytail holders. It distracted Adam how much he wanted to touch it. Pull it. Yank on it until...
"You okay?" Ryder asked. "Yeah."
Adam made himself calm down by looking over at the slightly raised dais where a coffin would rest, and he questioned every choice he'd ever made in his life about everything.
Dinner?
They walked to the last meal diner, and once again, Adam found himself thirstily devouring the best iced tea he'd ever had in his life.
Wait.
He stopped eating his hot brown and said with no small amount of triumph,
It's the water, isn't it? That's what makes your bourbon so unique. The water.
Ryder huffed and slouched like an ill-mannered teenager on his side of the vinyl booth and glared up at him through that inky dark hair with a scowl.
Whatever. Yeah.
Adam nodded, proud of himself for figuring it out.
That's why the coffee and the iced tea taste so good, too.
Yeah. That's why you gotta keep it local. Because if you move the still to Lexington, it'll lose its flavor, and then it won't be Hanged Man Bourbon anymore. Ryder straightened and morphed back into a grown-up. Mostly.
Then they'll discontinue it, and we really are screwed.
Adam didn't know what to say to that. He couldn't make any promises, and it was too soon yet to tell if the work required to fix up the distillery was beyond the scope of Bluegrass's investment.
So, tell me about being a horse farm magnate, Ryder said, surprising him.
Apparently he didn't want to talk business either.
Not much to tell, Adam answered truthfully. I'm not one. My family is, but other than growing up around them and, like I told you, learning to hate them, I don't have anything to do with the business. Not really. My dad wanted me to go to law school and work for Keller Farms like my older brother Eric, but I didn't want to.
You told me that part, but not why. 'Cause something tells me there ain't horses in the law offices, but what do I know? Ryder drank his Coke out of a straw. Of course he did. He gestured toward Adam's plate. You not like the hot brown?
I don't. Every time I order these, I do it because I see it on the menu and feel like it's my duty as a Kentuckian.
Adam looked down at the open-faced sandwich on the plate and scowled. No, the only duty you have as a Kentuckian is to abhor Jack Daniels, cheer for the Wildcats, hate Duke, and pretend you're excited about UK's chances in football this year. Adam snorted because he couldn't argue.
Anyway, my parents are very old-school Southern, he explained,
and Ryder blinked his mismatched eyes at him, obviously not sure what that meant.
It means they're stuffy, traditional, and don't care for new ideas, loud music, or wearing white after Labor Day.
Or being gay?
They don't like that I'm gay, but what they really disapprove of is me acting on it, I guess. My dad has affairs all the time, and I know my mom's aware of it, right? And I'm supposed to be just like that. Find a nice girl, marry her, give her kids and enough money that she can do whatever she wants, and then I can meet men in some seedy hotel in Carroll County and have anonymous gay sex.
Carroll County? Ryder raised his dark eyebrows. Why Carroll County?
Just an example, Adam mumbled at the table.
He could feel himself blushing. That you're using because you've been there?
Well, yes, I've been to Carroll County. Okay, fine. Maybe I met a guy there once. But it was only once.
He made a face.
He was into pony play. I don't have a problem with that or anything. It's just that the point was to get away from the horse farm. Would you stop laughing?
I can't, Ryder gasped, tears brightening his eyes. That's too... I can't believe you just said that.
Why? It's true. He had a saddle in his truck and everything.
Adam kept a straight face and forked up a bite of his hot brown. Making Ryder laugh was nice. Definitely. Not as nice as making Ryder come, but they were in public. Adam shifted in his seat, because his cock was way more interested in that idea than it had been in the pony play.
He did not, Ryder continued, still suffused with mirth.
He was hot when he was being fierce and protective of the town he obviously loved, but in good humor, he was almost too hot for Adam to look at.
Okay, no. But he wanted me to ride. Can we not talk about this here?
You brought it up. I was innocently asking about being a horse farm magnate, Adam. You're the one who took it to the pony play place.
Technically, Carrollton stud Chris did, Adam said dryly, and watched as Ryder cracked up again. You want to know what it was like? Growing up rich, I mean? He added hastily, at Ryder's raised eyebrows. Lonely and stifling. I had whatever I wanted, and I know that's a privilege, but there were a lot of expectations, and I was always afraid of not meeting them.
Adam felt his face flush. He couldn't believe he was saying that shit sober. It really must be the water.
It's pretty much the same way, even though I have my own place and my own job.
God, he sounded pathetic. Huh. It was kind of like that for me, too, said Ryder, his mirth having abated as he grew serious. I mean, I was expected to grow up and work at the distillery, especially since Uncle Z's good with clocks and bourbon barrels, but, people, not so much. Adam politely let that remark pass without comment. And everyone knew I was gay, right? But I swear to God, there's no one here on any part of the LGBTQ spectrum. Don't get me wrong, I know a lot of small towns wouldn't be so accepting, so I'm grateful for that.
A lot of small towns don't have businesses with pun names about death and criminals, Adam pointed out.
True, Ryder laughed. That's true. But it was, well, lonely, being the only one. And I felt like, still sometimes feel like, I'm on display here, you know? Resident gay guy, that kind of thing.
That was a lot of honesty, and Adam knew he should respond in kind. I had a boyfriend all through college. I refused to bring him home and introduce him to my family, even as a roommate. I was convinced that my family would take one look at us and know what the deal was, and I couldn't handle the reaction. I wouldn't let Logan answer my phone or anything if they called.
He looked down at his half-eaten meal and pushed it around with his fork.
He never understood how I could be out to my family and still so afraid of being seen. There was a long pause, and then Ryder said quietly,
I know they mean well, but people around here? They say things like, we totally support you if you want to have a gay wedding, Ryder. And no matter how many times I say it, they don't get that what I want is just to have a wedding, Adam finished.
Yeah, exactly.
Adam enjoyed the rare feeling of being with someone who understood.
And then a funeral at Ever After instead of a gay funeral at Gay Ever After?
Ryder snorted. Right? I guess if the bourbon distillery closes, I could, you know, open up a themed business of some kind, with a pun name that involves being gay, as well as the usual death and criminals thing.
Homo is where your dart is, Adam suggested. You could sell pool tables and dartboards and stuff. You know, leisure activities.
Ryder laughed, that loud, full laugh that made all the patrons look over at him fondly. God, that's clever. It's going to take me a while to come up with something. I'll have to keep you on retainer, or on a
one pony play joke and I'm out of here.
Ryder pouted, but his eyes sparkled. Fine. Finish your hot brown. They have some derby pie here that'll make you think you've died and gone to heaven. Gay heaven, straight heaven, bi heaven, you name it. Ryder paused. I bet there are way better puns for bisexual businesses. He cast a sly glance at Adam. Buy the book. Adam considered that as the waitress brought them both pie, even though he hadn't ordered any, and neither had Ryder.
That doesn't have the criminal or death thing going, though.
Ryder made a face. Fine. You come up with one, Mr. Expert.
Bite the bullet, Adam said immediately.
He lacked word games, and playing them with Ryder. An ammo store?
Nope. A bakery that makes cakes shaped like ammo. Hence the bite part.
Speaking of which, he took a bite of the derby pie and closed his eyes.
God, it really was good. This pie has to be featured in the bakery, though. Wow.
Right? Ryder took a bite and chewed with relish. They went back to their banter and came up with outrageous names for increasingly absurd businesses, until Adam realized it was nearly 10:30.
We should get out of here. Yeah, Ryder said huskily, his eyes drowsy and his look intent. We should.
The waitress brought them their check, and Adam had to remind her about the pie. Even if he technically hadn't ordered it, he'd eaten every bite and had to resist asking for another piece.
Oh, Mr. Adam, don't you worry,
the waitress said, in a voice like all she'd eaten for the last 20 years or so was a steady diet of gravel and unfiltered cigarettes.
That's on the house. Sure is nice to see our rider laughing and having a good time. Don't get to see him with anyone his own age all that often.
I'm right here, Mabel, Ryder groused, and to Adam's amusement, he looked like he was blushing.
I know. But you sure aren't going to find any boys as good-looking as Mr. Adam here in Gallows Grove, dear. That, you know.
She leaned in and pitched her voice low.
Gay.
Adam hit a laugh and a cough while Ryder sighed.
You can say it out loud, Mabel. Well, now, if you say so. I don't want to do anything wrong, Ryder. You're a good boy. And I think maybe my sister's nephew, Carter, he might be.
She stopped.
Can I say it out loud, even if he's not here to tell me it's all right?
There was no way in hell Gallows Grove was a real place, and that these were real people. But Ryder dealt with a well-meaning waitress with a lot of patience, which suggested that it was indeed real, and he was used to it. Sorry, Ryder said as they left and walked out into the night. It was chilly. A little bit of a bite in the air heralded the coming winter. She's probably planning our wedding as we speak. Oh, sorry, our gay wedding.
Maybe we shouldn't disappoint her, Adam said.
He was trying for banter until he realized he sounded like he'd proposed to Ryder Waits in front of the laundromat with a sign that read, The Perfect Grime. Adam cleared his throat.
I was trying to be clever and meant that, you know, having a wedding night.
Ryder spared him any additional embarrassment. Want to come to my place and fuck me?
Yes,
Adam said, desperate to end the conversation for more than one reason.
I do.
He followed Ryder a few blocks to the bar, then up a side staircase that led to Ryder's apartment. At the door, which wasn't locked, of course, Ryder stopped and said,
Okay, I thought I could, you know, maybe seduce you into giving the distillery a fair shot.
Stung, Adam crossed his arms and glared.
I was going to do that anyway, and it had nothing to do with us sleeping together.
I believe that. Now, I mean. Ryder looked at him, and in the light from the street lamp he looked young and tired, and Adam realized that Ryder was effectively carrying the weight of his small town's survival on his shoulders.
I really do want to go to bed with you. And not just because you're the hottest guy in town and you happen to also like dick.
He paused. But that doesn't hurt. Adam rolled his eyes and shoved at Ryder's shoulder.
I got it. Besides, I'm too boring to be seduced into corporate sabotage or whatever you're thinking.
I don't know about that. Ryder ushered him inside. The second the door closed, Ryder pressed against him, mouth eager and hands sliding beneath Adam's sweater.
I don't want to like you too much, though, he mumbled.
His mouth tasted like chocolate from the Derby pie, which made kissing him nearly irresistible. You'll go back to Lexington, and I'll be here, and my town's dream of a gay wedding will die unrealized.
Someone can use that name for a business, Adam suggested.
He felt far more lighthearted and playful than he had in a while. Probably pie and getting laid had something to do with it.
Die unrealized? Sounds like a hair salon. Or a place you paint your own pottery. Or, in this town, engrave your own tombstone.
No more puns. Not unless they're really good ones, Ryder bossed, and pushed at Adam as though Adam knew where he was going, and not remembering that Adam had never been there until Adam nearly tripped over something on the floor.
Oops, sorry.
Ryder flailed a hand out, and the apartment was flooded with light. Though it was more like a gentle dousing than a flood. Maybe the light was just trying to be kind to the apartment. Ryder's place wasn't dingy, and it certainly wasn't overdone like Adam's funeral parlor bedroom, but it was half industrial chic and half unfinished renovation, and Adam wondered if the part that was industrial chic was an accident. It had high ceilings and a sweet tin-tile ceiling, but the floors were apparently concrete and the exposed brick wall unintentionally cool. "I know," Ryder said, as Adam turned in a slow circle. "I was living in my mom's house, but I thought it would be neat to live in the heart of downtown."
"How far away is this place from your mom's house?"
Ryder coughed. 3 blocks. "But that's not the point. I grew up there, and she... I loved her very much, and I still miss her, but I wanted my own place. Besides, her decor featured a lot of astrology shit. I don't go out of my way to hide that I'm gay, and my mom definitely didn't go out of her way to hide the witchy stuff. I didn't really like it, but I didn't feel like I could change it either."
"She probably wouldn't mind," Adam said gently, and Ryder gave a half-hearted shrug.
"No, but it reminds me of her, you know, so I like that part. I just don't appreciate it in the same way. A guy I went to high school with, him and his wife are renting it because they're about to have a baby and needed more space. Anyway, I'm not sure if this apartment renovation is complete, hasn't started, or is halfway finished. But it's above a bar, so that's cool." Ryder winked at him. "The bedroom's finished, though." Adam followed him back through a small hallway and had to walk through the bathroom to get to the bedroom. The bedroom was definitely renovated enough to allow for actual walls, and on them were black and white framed photographs of Gallows Grove. Distracted, Adam perused them for a moment. They were stunning, managing to capture the quirkiness, but something else. The underlying vein of indomitable spirit that founded the town in the first place.
"These are amazing."
Thanks. The walls were pretty dull, and I have my mom's old 35mm camera, so seemed like a good way to get some cheap decor. Adam looked sharply at him.
"You took these. They're really good."
"Yeah, I did. Thanks." Ryder did the thing with his hair that Adam figured he did when he was nervous or uncomfortable. He raked it back with one hand and held it there with his elbow pointing straight out. "This town has a lot of inspiration to give." There was quiet pride in Ryder's voice, along with something else. Weary obligation, which oddly reminded Adam of his complicated feelings about his own family. He concentrated on the bed instead, because that was a lot more enjoyable than thinking about home. "I don't have any saddles hidden under there or anything," Ryder promised with a smile, and Adam ignored that in favor of walking forward, grabbing Ryder and kissing him while he pushed him down. It had been a while since Ryder had taken anyone to bed and made it clear he wanted to be pounded into the mattress. He went to Lexington when he was in the mood for company, to one of the gay bars around the university, and more often than not it was hurried blowjobs or handjobs and nothing else. He'd had a few hookups with a seriously hot frat guy, but that ended when the dude graduated and moved away. Besides, hooking up with college kids seemed creepier the older he got. Ryder hadn't had the urge to go to Lexington after all the drama of selling the recipe, and even before then, it seemed more trouble than it was worth. He had his right hand and a reliable internet connection and a subscription to a few porn sites and a folder full of bookmarks. But as he lay panting underneath Adam, it suddenly seemed like a poor substitute for the hard fuck he really wanted. Not just that, but it was nice to do it in his own bed, in his own town, with someone who knew his name, even. Adam stripped him with haste. Most of that stuffy, staid businessman persona fell away like their clothes. Adam's skin was heated and felt amazing beneath Ryder's hands as Adam moved on top of him, and his weight pushed Ryder into the bed. God, it felt so good.
"You didn't tell me what this was,"
Adam said, kissing at the tattoo on his chest. Ryder pushed himself on his elbows and blinked at Adam, confused and slightly concerned by the idea of a conversation at that particular moment. His cock throbbed, and he shifted beneath Adam, whose weight was too heavy and firm to allow him to move too much. Which, yeah, fuck, that totally did it for him. It's the Wheel of Fortune, from the tarot deck, not like by a vowel.
Adam leaned down to mouth at his neck. Tell me more. He shifted so his thigh was between Ryder's legs, giving him just enough pressure against his cock to make him want to beg. It means accepting what life has for you, the ups and downs of fate and that kind of thing. Ryder's eyes nearly rolled back in his head as Adam bit lightly at his ear and gave him a little more pressure against his cock as a reward for his answer. I got it. It was awkward. He'd gotten it for his mother, as a way to say he understood that life wasn't always going to be fair or easy, but that he'd always honor her spirit and keep living it the best he knew how. A good story, and he didn't mind telling it to Adam. Just maybe not right then.
You can tell me later.
Adam kissed him and pinned Ryder's wrists down as he straddled him.
Right now, I want you to tell me what you want.
Was that the same guy who'd been so insistent on having a conversation about dumpsters? It was almost hard to believe. Ryder took a dazed breath and spread his thighs, giving Adam more room to do whatever the hell he wanted.
Fuck me. I figured that part out.
Adam smirked down at him, bossy and cocksure and hot as fuck.
How do you want it?
Okay. So Mr. Stuffy was into seriously hot, dirty talk. Ryder could do that. God forbid anyone ever accuse him of not being up for something involving running his mouth.
Hard. Dirty. It's been a while, and I like it rough.
Adam's face flushed, and Ryder heard his sharp inhale and felt the way Adam's cock hardened against his thigh. He didn't let go of Ryder's wrists and still stared at him intently.
You want it like this? Or on your hands and knees?
Jesus, I want it any way you want to give it to me. Ryder breathed, captivated a bit by this very different side of Mr. Lexington.
Good answer, said Adam,
and he kissed him again. He leaned back and climbed off Ryder.
Get me condoms and lube, then get back over here.
Ryder stared for a second, then got up and hustled over to his dresser to rummage through the top drawer and find what he needed. On a whim, he grabbed the dildo and carried that over too. Adam's eyebrows raised, but he seemed to appreciate Ryder's initiative.
Use that so I can watch.
He sat back on the bed, stroking his own cock with one hand as he waited for Ryder to do what he wanted. Ryder shook his head as though clearing it and gave a gruff laugh.
This was a good idea.
It probably wasn't, but time enough to change his mind after it was over. For the moment, he was going to pretend he was brilliant and enjoy the fruit of his genius. He settled back on the bed with his legs spread, slicked up his fingers, and teased himself for a bit so Adam could watch.
Fuck yourself with your fingers, Adam said,
his voice low. Ryder bit his lip hard and did so. His back arched off the bed, and he reached for his cock with his other hand, only to have Adam give him a firm no. So all he could do was grab hard at the bedding beneath him. Adam stopped jacking off, but he kept watching Ryder, made appreciative noises, and reached for the dildo and the lube without taking his eyes off Ryder's fingers as Ryder fucked himself. He uncapped the lube and took his time getting the dildo lubed up, which was a captivating sight.
Fuck, I want you to do me,
Ryder said, because he liked the idea of the dildo, but he was ready enough that he didn't need it, and hot enough for Adam that he didn't even want it.
But I went to all this trouble to get it ready for you,
Adam chastised, frowning.
You know I don't like to waste my time, Ryder.
Ryder needed a few seconds to make his muscles and brain catch up with each other when he heard that. He wordlessly held out his hand for the dildo.
I'll do it. Spread your legs.
Ryder did so, and kept his breathing deep and even as Adam stroked the slicked-up silicone dildo over his cock, rubbing it over his balls, and teased at his hole. He pushed the tip of it in, and Ryder arched, wanting more.
Fuck. Almost.
Adam gripped the base of the dildo, slid it in, inch after inch, and pulled it out again with the same torturous slowness.
Remember how I said I wanted you to fuck me hard and fast? Dirty,
Adam reminded him, and gave an extra push to the dildo, making it bump against Ryder's prostate.
You said hard and dirty, not fast.
Ryder tried to scowl, but it was hard when he was moaning.
Dirty means you give it to me fast, he panted. Dirty means I give it to you like I want to, said Adam.
Holy fuck. Ryder stopped talking and let his knees fall open, shamelessly fucking himself on the dildo when Adam allowed it.
You want more?
Ryder nodded.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
Ask for it. Ryder's eyes were half closed, but he opened them when Adam said that.
Fuck me harder.
He didn't say please. That didn't seem very dirty. Apparently, Adam didn't need to hear it either. He fucked Ryder with the dildo and smacked at Ryder's hand when he tried to get it on his cock.
You look so hot, Adam told him.
Ryder enjoyed the hell out of that, but not so much that he didn't bat his eyes and say,
enough to ride me like a stallion? What did I say about the pony play jokes?
Adam tossed the dildo aside and reached for a condom. It was honestly hard to remember, because Adam was getting his dick ready to fuck Ryder, and that was all Ryder could concentrate on at the moment, especially when Adam slapped Ryder's cock, not hard, but fuck if that didn't almost make Ryder come, and said,
hands and knees, you said you wanted it dirty.
Right then, Ryder wanted it any way he could get it. He turned to brace himself on his hands and knees as bidden, and then shifted around and looked over his shoulder as Adam moved in place behind him. Adam got a good grip on Ryder's hips and slid his cock in the crease of his ass. He teased over Ryder's hole and made him want to scream.
Gonna make me take that dick slow, like I took that dildo?
No, said Adam. He pressed the tip of his cock against Ryder and then inside, with one long, delicious thrust that wasn't slow, but wasn't fast exactly. Ryder had thought the dildo would be too much to keep him as tight as he liked for the next part, but he shouldn't have worried. Adam's cock was the perfect size to give him the stretch he wanted and the burn that hurt in the right way. He still had to breathe and concentrate on relaxing and pushing back as Adam pressed in. Adam knew what he was doing, and it showed. He fucked Ryder with a strong, hard rhythm that kept him on the right side of breathless, one hand on Ryder's hip and the other wrapped around the back of Ryder's neck. All the little, possessive, dominant gestures really did it for Ryder, and he wanted to grab his cock, but didn't want to slip or, okay, fine, have Adam tell him to stop. Adam slid his hand up and down Ryder's back, and then settled it on the nape of Ryder's neck.
This how you wanted it?
God, was it ever.
Harder,
moaned Ryder. His head dropped down, and he was sweating. He could feel it stinging his eyes, and his knees were losing purchase on the slick sheets.
Fuck, it was good.
Perfect. Adam grabbed both his hips and went for it, so hard that Ryder ended up falling flat on his stomach while Adam slammed into him. His cock rubbed against the bedding, and that would be enough to get him off, which was insane and hot and...
Oh, God. I'm gonna come,
Ryder mumbled into the pillow, and he didn't even know if Adam could hear him. But Adam gave a choked groan and an,
oh God,
of his own, and when the friction was enough to finally push Ryder into an orgasm and make him come all over his sheets, Adam fell gracelessly on top of him and fucked Ryder through his orgasm and straight into one of his own. He bit the back of Ryder's shoulder when he came, and Ryder could feel Adam's heart pounding against his back. They separated at length, Ryder still a boneless heap on the bed, simply turning his head to catch his breath. Adam flopped down on his back, hands beneath his head, and looked relaxed. Probably proud of himself, the smug bastard. But Ryder couldn't really fault him for that. He should be proud of himself.
God damn. That what you wanted?
Ryder smiled lazily.
Yeah,
but thanks for making me come all over my sheets, jerk.
Consider it revenge for my dress shirt,
Adam said dryly, and Ryder laughed. Yeah, it was going to seem like such a bad idea the next day, but for right then he felt great.
Mr. Wood will be on in a moment, Mr. Keller, said Amy, Garrett Wood's assistant. He's just finishing a conference call.
Adam made a non-committal noise, sat on the rocking chair, and wondered idly if he'd sat on one since he was a teenager. His parents had them, of course. All good Southerners had rocking chairs on their porches. Or a swing. But he hadn't been on one in a long time. He avoided going home if he could help it. And family dinners were stilted affairs, served in the dining room, and did not inspire any desire to linger when they were over. He couldn't imagine why there'd be rocking chairs on the porch of a funeral home for similar reasons. But what did he know? The town was turning out to be nothing like he'd thought. That, of course, made him think of Ryder, which Adam should not be doing when he was about to talk to his boss, even if he was technically on hold. Except the hold music was boring, and his mind kept wandering to better things. Namely, Ryder on his back with his legs spread, open and wanting and asking for Adam's cock.
Adam, sorry about the wait.
Mr. Wood's voice breezed, causing Adam to flush and look around furtively, as though anyone were there to see him sport wood while sitting in a wooden rocking chair on a wood porch while talking to Mr. Wood. God, the town just pulled crazy down from the ether. It really did.
No problem, said Adam, trying to inflect some breeziness into his own voice, because if he sounded wooden...
Yeah, no. It was already absurd enough.
How's it going in Hangman's Hollow?
Adam wondered if that name had been on the list of rejected possible town names. He'd have to ask Ryder.
It's going fine, sir, he said. I'm getting the reports completed, and I should have the first round sent off for you in a day or two.
Still on time to complete the initial appraisal?
Even if he weren't, Adam knew better than to say so.
Absolutely, sir.
Good, that's good. And the local yokels aren't giving you any problems?
Not unless you count ill-timed hard-ons and a pie addiction.
They've been surprisingly helpful.
And limber.
It's quite a town, sir, he added. Lots of character.
Wood snorted.
I'll bet. I knew it'd help that you were from Lexington.
It hadn't, but Adam kept that to himself.
They're excited about the prospect of a tour stop, he said, in lieu of anything else. And I think investors might feel the same way.
What about you? What do you think?
I think they would, yes.
That he could say definitively, because Gallows Grove was just the right kind of quirky that you could experience safely for a few hours and then leave before you really thought about all the macabre business names and began to dread nightfall. Wood told him to check his email for a few more forms, talked briefly about UK's chances in the tournament that year, and then ended the call. Adam sat for a few more minutes on the porch, rocking and thinking about Ryder. It wasn't his place to fix Ryder's town or his life, and he knew that. He shouldn't be sleeping with Ryder, but there were no real rules against it, per se. And as for the fact that Adam was gay, Wood's daughter was a lesbian who was prominent in local politics. The company was a supporter of Lexington's Pride Festival, and there were other LGBT people on staff who were open about it. Just not Adam. There wasn't anything in the contract that said he couldn't have a, whatever it was, a fling or a hookup with Ryder, but it certainly wasn't in keeping with Adam's usual business practices, or his usual romantic practices. He groaned, put his face in his hands, and then made himself get up off the chair. He had work to do. Adam went upstairs, grabbed his keys, and headed back down the front stairway. As he passed the large, empty parlor, he stopped dead in his tracks. The clock. It was ticking as loudly as he'd ever heard it, and he knew that time he wasn't imagining things. He went over to it, ignored the slight chill steadily inching down his spine, and told himself he was being an idiot. Why would a ghost hang around there, when it had all those ghoulishly named establishments to haunt? He peered at the clock, which was perched on the mantle and ticking so loudly that Adam could have sworn there was an echo. He folded his arms and scowled. It was stupid. The clock was just ticking, and he noticed it because there were no other sounds, and he was deep in thought. For a moment, he considered getting up and putting the damn thing in the basement. But wasn't the basement where they usually embalmed dead bodies? No way. The damn thing could tick itself merrily into oblivion. Adam was not going to worry about it. The only thing that should concern him was that he was going to be late for his meeting with Zeno Waits, and he definitely didn't want to miss it. Getting Ryder's eccentric uncle to meet with him in the first place had been difficult enough. Zeno had more gray in his hair than his nephew, but it was still the same coal black, and with those disconcerting dual-colored eyes. It wasn't hard to see why people mistook him for Ryder's father. Zeno scowled when Adam arrived at the distillery, as though he were 20 minutes late instead of 10 minutes early.
"Don't got a lot of time," Zeno muttered.
He kept his hair shorter than Ryder's, and wore a beard that wasn't out of control but wasn't exactly neat either. He wasn't quite handsome, but he was striking enough. If Ryder ended up looking like that in 20 or so years, he wouldn't be a bad-looking man. Maybe without the beard, though. Fuck. Why was Adam thinking about that? Ryder was going to grow old in Gallows Grove, and Adam was never coming back. Maybe he'd stop by if the place ended up on the Bourbon Trail, but that wouldn't be any time soon.
"I'll make this quick," Adam promised as he pulled out his pen. "I just have a few questions."
Zeno crossed his arms, glared, and leaned back against one of the vats.
"All right."
For all his initial reticence and scowliness, Zeno really did know his bourbon. He also lost some of said scowliness as they talked, and clearly he had a passion for the art of making whiskey. In fact, he talked about Hanged Man bourbon with the same reverence and love with which Ryder talked about the town itself.
"Tell me about the water," said Adam, when it seemed like maybe Zeno had thawed enough to actually answer. "I know there's something special about it."
Zeno squinted at him.
"Sure. You work in Lexington. You know you gotta have your limestone rocks for the water to be right."
Yes, of course Adam knew that. The high calcium and iron deposits from the limestone in the water didn't just make good bourbon. They helped thoroughbreds have strong bones. Hence the proliferation of distilleries and horse farms in the area. But he also knew there was something else giving Hanged Man its distinctive taste. Ditto with the tea and coffee. That wasn't just the limestone.
"Yeah, and there's something else, isn't there?"
Zeno studied him with the same sharp scrutiny as before.
"You know what county we're in, boy?"
Adam was from Kentucky, where more often than not, people answered the question, "Where are you from?" with a county, instead of a town.
"Believe it's Elliott County."
"That it is."
Zeno kept staring. Adam stared back. He sighed.
"And?"
"Kimberlite."
That word meant nothing to Adam.
"Kimber what?"
It sounded like some kind of beer.
"As opposed to Kimber Dark?"
Zeno's mouth didn't so much as twitch. "Kimberlite. It's a mineral. Look it up on the internets."
The internets. Adam struggled to keep his face just as impassive as Zeno's, as though they were playing some kind of weird verbal dominance game.
"All right, so this mineral is rare?"
"Yep."
Zeno took a moment to stir something before he elaborated.
"Don't find it many places. Just Elliott County in the States. In South Africa it gives you diamonds, but ain't nobody found any diamonds around here."
"Just damned good whiskey,"
Adam said with a hint of a smile. Surprisingly, Zeno returned it in kind.
"Yep."
Adam made a note about the Kimberlite, and then asked a few more questions. Zeno surprised him by taking him to the warehouse where they kept the barrels. He talked about the different experiments he'd been conducting with barrel placement and wood construction. By the time they were done, he was as animated as Adam had ever seen him. and he almost flat-out smiled a few times.
"Thanks for meeting with me," Adam said when they finished. He was surprised to find they'd spent more than 2 hours in conversation. "You come by that master title honest."
Zeno shrugged and looked a little embarrassed.
"Well, someone had to be into it after my sister Maisie, Ryder's mama, passed. Knew it wasn't going to be something my nephew was into."
"Oh?"
Adam didn't want to sound too curious, but he couldn't help it.
"Why's that?"
He fiddled with his pen and pretended he couldn't feel the weight of Zeno's stare boring into the side of his head.
"Can't rightly see Ryder spending all his time in here with a bunch of barrels now, can you?"
Zeno's voice became sly.
"Thought you would have figured that out about my nephew by now. He's a fixer, like me with clocks, or like Maisie was with her potions and things. But Ryder now, he likes fixing people, not things."
"People and towns." Adam didn't know if he should nod or not, because he wasn't sure he wanted to talk about Ryder on a personal level with Zeno, who was proving to be incredibly perceptive.
"He cares a lot about Gallows Grove," Adam allowed. "It's very obvious."
"Ryder needs this town like yeast needs sugar," Zeno shrugged. "Bourbon may be in his blood, but Gallows Grove is in his heart, and a heart don't work without blood, so..."
"So?" Adam prompted.
Zeno fixed him with that heterochromatic stare of his.
"If this town has a heart, it ain't this place. It ain't a place at all. But other than that, Mr. Keller, I ain't sure what to tell you."
Adam nodded and checked his phone for the time.
"I'll let you know if I have any follow-up questions."
Zeno nodded.
"You do that. And Mr. Keller..."
"Yes?"
A pause.
"You go and hurt my nephew's feelings. I might have a thing or two to say about that."
"Oh, Jesus Christ." Adam turned 6 shades of red, mumbled something unintelligible, and headed for the door. For the first time since Adam had met the guy, Zeno Waits laughed. "So how'd your talk with my uncle go?" Ryder asked later, as he brought Adam a beer from the fridge. "Fucking hell, boys!" He scowled at the television, on which the Wildcats were steadily losing a 10-point lead against the Mizzou Tigers. "That team ain't even been in the SEC long enough to beat us at Rupp." Adam was distracted by the game as he took a beer from Ryder. They were at Ryder's place, and Ryder had grilled them hamburgers in a skillet and served them with fresh buns from the local bakery. Wanted, bread or alive. Apparently he'd been there too long, because other than a brief snort, Adam barely reacted to the name. The meal was great, and Adam could feel the low hum of sexual tension. It added a pleasant anticipation to the evening, and something to look forward to if UK managed to blow their lead and lose the game.
"It was fine. He told me about the Kimberlite."
"Ah."
Ryder perched on the side of the couch, his beer bottle dangling between his long fingers. "Thought he might.
He also warned me not to hurt your feelings."
Adam didn't say that. Instead, he watched UK go on a 9-0 run, and they both visibly relaxed as the Wildcats took a comfortable lead. Wildcat fans were not happy unless the team was up by at least 10 points at the half, which was a few minutes away.
"I looked it up after I left. I had no idea it was so localized to Elliott County."
Ryder shrugged.
"Yeah, we learned a bit about it in school."
"And are they sure that's the thing that gives the water such a distinctive taste?" Adam asked. "I mean, couldn't it be something else?"
"Some geologists from the university came here and did some tests in the 70s, Ryder said. He hopped off the couch, put his beer on the coffee table, and disappeared for a few minutes. Adam heard the sound of rustling and a low curse coming from the bedroom. And then Ryder reappeared and shoved something at him. "Here." Adam opened his hand instinctively and looked down in his palm. It was a rock, dark greenish-black, with a bit of a sparkle.
"Is this it?"
"Yup." Ryder flashed him a grin. "You want to lick it, don't you? Admit it."
What? No.
Adam scowled. Maybe he thought about it.
Why do you have this?
It's not illegal to have a rock, Adam, Ryder said, and his accent and the grin were just... fuck. Adam smiled back before he could even think about it. Pretty, ain't it?
Yeah,
said Adam, thinking how the greenish color reminded him of the flecks in Ryder's hazel eye. He rubbed his thumb over the rock.
Pretty.
They made out through halftime, but when the game came back on, they moved away from each other on the couch so they could watch the rest of it. Kentucky fans were serious about their basketball. Ryder knew he shouldn't get used to having Adam around, because he wasn't going to be in Gallows Grove all that much longer. His assessment was winding up, and Ryder had a sinking suspicion that Adam might have been purposely stalling on finishing it, just so he could stick around a little longer. Though that might have been wishful thinking on Ryder's part, because the truth of it was, he did want Adam to stick around a little longer. More than that, maybe. He'd never been one for relationships, because he'd never really had the opportunity to have one. But the whole throwing back a few beers, watching the game, and then having hot, sweaty sex? Yep, a guy could get used to that. Ryder definitely could. And Adam, once he got past the reserved nature and the lingering stuffiness he associated with his job, or once he got a few beers or some good bourbon in him, was fun to be around. They had more in common than Ryder would have thought when they first met, and Adam was a fan of Murder by Death, an indie Americana band that had recently made Louisville their home. They spent an entire night listening to Ryder's favorite album of theirs, Good Morning Magpie, and debating good-naturedly about the evolution of their sound over the years. No one in Gallows Grove even knew who Murder by Death was, and whenever they had a show in Kentucky, Ryder always had to go alone, which was fine, and he usually met someone for a quick hookup after the show, but he was getting tired of those. He even partnered up with Adam to play euchre one night at the trapdoor, and they won more than they lost, mostly because of Adam, since Ryder didn't have a poker face to save his life. But it was a fun night. The locals easily accepted Adam, since Ryder clearly had, and he caught more than a few knowing looks exchanged between the townspeople. They didn't act like a couple or anything, no more than any of the other young couples in Gallows Grove, of which there were admittedly not very many, but somehow everyone just seemed to know. Ryder put off thinking about Adam leaving, and made an effort to enjoy the moment, but he knew that would come to an end. Which it did 5 minutes before, when Adam said, "I'm heading back to Lexington tomorrow." And all those bad feelings Ryder was trying to avoid came crashing down, like the ominous tarot he'd drawn for himself before bed the night before. The tower, in which things fall apart. He swallowed hard, and tried to appear nonchalant, because Adam had chosen to tell him in the office, in front of Heather, and he had to keep his composure.
"Aw, well, Adam, we're sure gonna miss you," Heather said,
and she gave a worried look at Ryder without trying to hide it. The tips of Adam's ears went red, but it appeared as if he too was pretending not to notice the ill-disguised concern.
"I want to get these reports filed as soon as possible, so things can progress to the next stage."
He cleared his throat and didn't look at Ryder.
"With the distillery."
Wait, why did Adam find it necessary to add that little disclaimer at the end? Was there a second stage for the two of them? Scowling, Ryder finished signing yet another form, leaned back in his chair, and fought to keep his expression neutral. "Cool." "Yeah, wow, great response. It'll be good to get things going." He paused deliberately. "With the distillery."
"Absolutely."
Adam didn't even add his usual line about reasonable effort. He seemed to pull himself out of his thoughts and switch back to work mode.
"I know it seems like I've been very nitpicky with this whole thing, and you might be worried and overwhelmed at all the data I've collected, but it's my opinion that the distillery is actually in fairly good shape and doesn't require a complete overhaul. I can't make any promises, but I don't see any reason why Bluegrass would choose to move the line."
Ryder was glad to hear that, but all he managed to say was, "Huh, cool." What the fuck was his problem?
"Cool? Adam, that's great, Heather enthused.
And she moved around to throw her arms around him from behind his chair and hug him. It clearly made Adam uncomfortable, but he awkwardly patted her arm.
Thank you so much for all your hard work.
It's just his opinion, Ryder put in, feeling a bit put out for no reason. Technically, he was the one who made it happen, wasn't he? Or, okay, fine. He started the ball rolling. Actually, he really didn't care about taking the credit so much as just getting the ball down the hill. So why did he feel like he wanted to do nothing but throw himself in front of that metaphorical ball and stop it any way he could? He had to remember that the town was what mattered when it came to the business side of his relationship with Adam. If there was another side, they could talk about it that night, before Adam left. Ryder couldn't help but think about that card he pulled. Most people thought the worst card you could pull from a tarot deck was death, but that wasn't true. Death was just a herald for change. The tower. Now, that symbolized things like the utter ruination of one's plans or hopes, and that was a little tougher to handle, especially when Ryder didn't know what it referred to, his hope for the town's future, or for him and Adam. Determined not to dwell on it, Ryder presented Adam with a bottle of the rarest and finest Hanged Man bourbon as a gift, and that was that. They left the distillery in separate cars, but met back up at the Last Meal Diner for supper. And unless Adam was planning on swinging by for breakfast, the name was right on target for once. It would be their last meal together, and not even the Derby pie tasted good knowing that. "Why don't you just bring your stuff over to my place from the funeral home?" Ryder asked, as they paid their check and headed out into the cool night. It hadn't been a very lively dinner, as the tension between them was a strange mix of sex and impending goodbyes. "You can just head out from there." He didn't want to say leave, which was stupid. They hadn't known each other all that long. But emotions were dumb and followed no logic, and it was more the loss of potential that Ryder hated.
"Okay," said Adam, still relatively quiet.
He kept looking at Ryder like he wanted to say something, and then not doing it.
"What?"
Ryder asked, finally, as he climbed into Adam's BMW. "Seriously, what is it?"
"Are you sure it wouldn't be better if I just stayed there tonight? At the funeral home, I mean."
He was staring straight ahead, hands on the wheel, but the car wasn't moving and he hadn't even turned the key in the ignition.
"Alone?"
Stung, Ryder didn't know what to say.
"If you want."
Adam finally glanced over at him, but it was too dark in the car for Ryder to read his expression.
"It's not really about what I want."
It was a stupid conversation.
"What else would it be about?"
Ryder felt a brief flare of anger. "You don't have to spend the night with me."
"You know I want to," Adam said, resting a hand on Ryder's knee. "I just don't know if it's for the best."
Even that brief touch sent all the blood straight to Ryder's dick. He'd been attracted to Adam from the very first, and Ryder hadn't realized how much it sucked to go without even the most casual of touches, until he had someone who did it on a daily basis.
"Why?"
asked Ryder, because apparently he had newfound masochistic tendencies to indulge.
"Because I'm leaving in the morning?"
Adam took his hand away, started the car, and headed the short distance down the empty street toward the funeral home.
"I don't want it to be weird."
It was the perfect time to bring up the idea of seeing each other, even with Adam in Lexington, but Ryder was reluctant to do it. He couldn't stop thinking about that damn tower card, and if things with the distillery were proceeding as planned, then that could only mean one thing. If this relationship was over at sunup, he wanted to at least get laid one more time before dawn. Unfortunately, Ryder wasn't very good at following his own strategic plans.
"I know you're leaving in the morning, but that doesn't mean we can't keep seeing each other."
He tried a smile. "Lexington ain't that far away, you know." His feeling of impending doom grew worse the longer Adam remained quiet. Adam pulled into the back driveway of the funeral home and put the car into park. He also didn't turn it off, which wasn't a good sign.
"I can't do that."
The only thing that made it slightly okay was that he sounded as tortured by the admission as Ryder felt hearing it. Can't or won't?
Both, said Adam, as he stared at his hands on the steering wheel.
Before Ryder could say anything, he switched off the car, climbed out, slammed the door, and left Ryder staring at him in dismay and with no small amount of irritation.
Hey, he said as he followed him into the house. Fuck, wait a minute, okay, you can't and won't, but why?
Look, dude, if this was just a hookup, tell me, I'll get over it.
Following someone up the stairs was a weird way to have a conversation. Adam went directly to the room at the end of the hall, and Ryder followed him, because if he wasn't getting laid, he was at least getting closure.
Seriously, Adam, what the fuck?
Adam grabbed a duffel and slung it on the bed. Then he turned sharply to look at Ryder. It should have mollified Ryder's pride to see how miserable Adam looked, but it didn't. Not at all.
Look, it's not like that. I like you, Ryder. A lot. And I hate that this happened now. Here, because...
Because what? Ryder demanded. And he stepped forward. Because I live in Hick Hollow?
No, goddammit, because I don't.
Adam went back to viciously shoving clothes in his duffel, the jeans and casual wear he wore whenever he wasn't in one of those suits of his.
I have a life back in Lexington, and this isn't it.
Ryder had always thought struck speechless was hyperbole, but apparently it wasn't. His jaw was hanging open, albeit only slightly. What the hell was he supposed to say to that? So this was just a hookup? Of course it was. Ryder had been stupid to think it could be anything else. Adam was rich, well-educated, and had a fancy job and an important family back in Lexington. Ryder had a high school diploma, lived above a bar in a half-renovated apartment, and wore band t-shirts. Just because they were good in bed and Adam had a knack with puns didn't make it anything but a convenience.
I told you it wasn't, said Adam softly, shoulders hunched. It's not you, Ryder.
Oh my God, don't you dare say that, Ryder snapped, coming out of his stupor and falling headlong into fury. Even if it's true, just say you don't want some stupid hick embarrassing you in Lexington, and I'll call you an asshole and walk back to my apartment.
You remember how you didn't like me at first?
I don't like you now, said Ryder, glaring. So yeah. Adam's jaw ticked.
That's who I am, all the time, in Lexington. So it's not about me being embarrassed. It's about you being disappointed when I'm not the same guy I am when I'm here.
Ryder was so frustrated he wanted to pull his own hair. This life of yours in Lexington, do you even like it that much? 'Cause it sure sounds like you don't. And if you like me as much as you say you do, then it's pretty stupid to go back to it, isn't it?
It is what it is, said Adam, with an air of finality.
That was it, then. The potential Ryder had sensed between them was meaningless, and the tower had been right on the money. God damn it. Why did Ryder have to inherit his mother's divination skills? One more reason he wanted to have a long sit-down discussion with his dear mama in the hereafter about why naming your child after a deck of tarot cards was a bad idea. And you don't even want to think about changing that, do you? Ryder said, not bothering to keep the disgust from his voice. Why? 'Cause of your family's money? I hope it's worth living a life you hate, just to buy next year's Beamer. If he was going to tear shit down, he was going to tear it down. Take that, tower card.
Maybe it'll have some nice heated seats to keep you warm, since nobody else will. Have a nice life, Mr. Keller.
He was halfway to the door when Adam said,
What about you? Do you really love this town that much? Or are you just afraid of what you are without it?
You're making it pretty clear what I am without it, and that's nobody.
Ryder waited half a second. But when Adam continued to stare disconsolately at his partly packed bag and didn't say anything, Ryder gave up. With a disgusted noise, he turned and stomped out of the room, down the hallway, and down each and every step of the elaborate front staircase. As he left, he thought he could hear a clock ticking in the darkness. Adam sat in his office, ignoring his last Skyline chili cheese coney in favor of the actual skyline of Lexington, and hating his life choices. Not about his lunch, per se, but because of the mopiness that kept him from tasting anything but cardboard and mush. It had been 6 weeks since Adam left Gallows Grove, bleary-eyed after a sleepless night spent tossing and turning, and ignoring that goddamn clock, and stopped himself from getting in his car, driving over to Ryder's apartment, and telling him he changed his mind. Then he remembered what Ryder said, about how Adam was living a life he hated and wasn't willing to change it, and how he implied it was for money, as though Adam cared about that. What's it for, then? Fuck if he knew. That fight made him angry, but what really kept him tossing and turning was remembering how disappointed Ryder was over Adam's staunch refusal to even consider continuing to see each other. He knew it was stupid, and a lame excuse, and at about 3 in the morning, he sat up and said out loud, "Fine. I'm afraid of trying something and changing my whole life, and then fucking it up and being left with nothing." As though anyone could hear him but that stupidly loud clock and a room full of dolls. Because that was the gist of it, right? Ryder was young, hip, and seriously hot. Adam was stuffy, closeted, and uptight. Even more so in Lexington, where he had a stuffy, closeted, and uptight reputation that he'd spent years building. Not to mention a family that was the very definition of uptight and stuffy. Adam felt a connection to Ryder, and he knew it was more than just physical attraction, and maybe there could have been something there if Adam were willing to throw his whole life into chaos. But why should he? For a guy he barely knew? Because you're not happy. The only thing you like about your life is your job, and now it just makes you think about Rider Waits and bourbon and horrible macabre puns and how you were happier living in a funeral home than your own luxury apartment. Disgusted, Adam cleared up the detritus of his takeout lunch, carried it through to the break room, deposited everything in the correct receptacles, and grabbed a bottle of water out of the fridge on his way back to the office. He had a few things to look over that in no way required his immediate attention, which meant he could go back to brooding about Ryder. Or thinking about fucking Ryder, though he saved those thoughts for when he was at home, in bed, or in the shower. "Ah, Adam." Mr. Wood's smooth voice broke through Adam's inner turmoil, and Adam was profoundly grateful. "I was just on my way to your office. Have a moment?" Adam wondered what his boss would do if he said, "No, I'm too busy sulking over a guy," and gave a polite smile. "Of course," he said. "I'm just finishing lunch." Wood kept up some polite small talk as he followed Adam back to his office and settled himself in the chair across from Adam's desk.
"So I thought you might like to know what we decided about Gallows Grove."
Oh, fuck. Adam had been both dreading and anticipating this day, and the hot dogs he hadn't even tasted churned in his stomach. He knew it would devastate Ryder if they opted not to shore up the distillery and move the production to Lexington.
Yes, I'd be interested.
"Your reports were incredibly thorough, by the way. Everyone from the folks in finance to research and development had nothing but praise for your work."
That was nice to hear. At least Adam hadn't fucked everything up.
"I'm glad to hear that, sir."
Wood waved a hand, never one to stand on ceremony with his employees.
"The initial decision was to improve the distillery and increase the production by enough to make it financially viable for us to keep making Hanged Man in Gallows Grove." Wood snorted.
"That name, I can't get over it. It's going to be a very small line, but we'll upsell it because of that, and it should turn us a tidy profit in a few years."
Despite his lingering anger at Ryder, which, to be honest, was mostly self-directed, it did make Adam happy to hear that.
"That's great. Is it really the Kimberlite that makes a difference?"
"I don't know, to tell the truth, but I like the sound of it."
Wood waved a hand.
"There's a lot of colorful legends about the town and the region, and I'd hate to be the asshole who proved them false. And besides, the investors liked the idea of Gallows Grove getting a stop on the trail. They really did."
That was also good news, for the most part.
"But," Adam prompted,
wanting to hear the rest.
But the infrastructure and management, that's going to need more from us than just some upkeep on the distillery. If Waits is serious about it, he would have to sell us the actual land and the still itself, not just the intellectual property rights to his whiskey. We'd have to do a lot more to improve the facilities, get the place on the historic register, get the place up to ADA code, likely hire more staff and increase the production aspect, and that's just for starters. It's going to take someone to manage all that, and while Mr. Waits is a smart kid, he's in no way qualified.
And did you tell him that? Adam asked, trying to sound as though his interests were merely about the project and nothing more.
I did, in fact. I offered him a choice. I said we'd either honor our initial contract and leave him in charge of an improved small distillery, or he could sign a new one. If he really wants that spot on the trail, he'll have to sell us the whole shebang and let me get someone in there who knows their stuff.
Wood paused and gave Adam a very significant look.
Someone I can trust, who is already in pretty good with the locals, already knows the setup and what's required, and is smart as a whip.
Said Adam, because he absolutely could not believe it was happening.
You don't mean me, do you?
Wood beamed.
Indeed. It would be up to you, of course, if you wanted to relocate completely. And if you'd rather not, I'll understand and we'll open the position up company-wide. But everyone was impressed with how thorough you were in your initial evaluation, and I know this is something you've been interested in.
Adam swallowed and tried to talk around his suddenly dry mouth.
Yes, it's definitely something I'm interested in.
It was, too. He loved the idea of running a distillery, setting up procedures and managing staff, that kind of thing. It was exactly what he'd gone to school to do, and it would offer him a way to completely distance himself from the Keller name and his family's not-so-subtle pressure that he work for the horse farm. Bourbon was as sacred as horses, so it wasn't like they'd be ashamed of him or anything.
Well, think about it, Wood said, standing up. I gave Waits until the end of the week to get back to me with his decision, so we'll see what he says. If he chooses to keep the still, then it won't be an issue. But if he's really serious about getting that town a stop on the trail, then it's a distant possibility that a position right up your alley might be available. And you know, Wood continued, you wouldn't have to live there or anything. I'm sure there are nicer, less weird towns nearby.
Right, said Adam, dazed and trying to sound professional.
Of course.
Clear your calendar for Friday, Wood said cheerfully on his way out. That's when Mr. Waits will be here, and we'll all have a meeting to discuss it.
Oh, God. 2 days. He had 2 days to get ready for that, and it sure as hell wasn't enough time.
Ow! Ryder, stand still, Heather admonished him.
My sight's not very good,
said Dorothy, Heather's aunt, who was in her 70s. She was also, at the moment, trying to pin Ryder's suit pants so she could quickly hem them before his big meeting in Lexington. She'd already stuck him with a pin about 16 times, and she wasn't even done with the left cuff.
I still don't see why I have to wear a suit, Ryder groused.
Heather patted him on the arm in a soothing fashion.
You want to look your best, Ryder?
Did he? For what? To sell off the land and the distillery, along with the recipe for Hanged Man bourbon? Because of course that's what he was going to do. An improved distillery with him at the helm didn't mean anything if the town didn't benefit.
Maybe Adam was right, and he was doing the same thing, living his life for the town.
But what else did he have?
Adam.
Ryder hated thinking about that last conversation, and he went back and forth between feeling embarrassed and furious. Embarrassed that he'd put himself out there when he should have known better, and furious at Adam for ignoring that they might have something worth pursuing. And if Adam was determined to have that conversation, he could have at least gotten laid before he started it. But no. Dorothy moved on to the other cuff, and his ankle was spared from her pins. So far.
You gonna see Mr. Lexington when you're there?
Heather asked, in the worst attempt at nonchalance ever. Ryder would have preferred 65 of Dorothy's pins sticking him simultaneously to answering that question. People had noticed he was mopey when Adam left, though no one had actually dared ask him if they'd been hooking up or anything. Hell, for all they knew, Ryder'd had a crush on the guy, and that was the extent of it. But the fact he got free pie at the diner, and was the recipient of at least 4 or 5 compassionate looks an hour from Heather at work? Yeah, they probably all figured out Ryder and Adam had been banging. Maybe he should just move. Louisville would be nice, even if that traitor Rick Pitino lived there. I don't know, he said, in answer to Heather's question. Not real sure about the specifics of this meeting. He might be there, he might not. Ryder honestly didn't know which he'd prefer at that point. Part of him wanted to see Adam again, and part of him didn't. One part of him was definitely into the idea, but that wasn't something he should think about with a genteel southern seamstress kneeling so close to his... anyway.
Don't see why you wouldn't want to see him, Dorothy said pertly. Seems you two got on real well when he was here.
Ryder's eyes widened, and he stared down at her. She waved a hand and said around a mouthful of pins,
Ryder, I'm 73 years old. You think there's much of anything that's going to shock me?
Actually, yeah. Dorothy had lived her whole life in Gallows Grove, so he assumed there were a lot of things that would shock her.
You're gay, he's gay, and you two did the horizontal tango.
She frowned, took a pin out, and tucked it into the fabric, nearly missing his ankle.
Or whatever the phrase is, I don't know. Robert doesn't tango much anymore, horizontal or otherwise. Thank Lord Jesus for the internet.
Aunt Dorothy, Heather gasped. Stop that! You're embarrassing Ryder.
And her, if the color of her face was any indication. Dorothy stuck one more pin in Ryder's cuff, tugged a few times, and then nodded and reached up for Heather to help her to her feet.
Sex is sex. That's not what makes a partnership. You gotta laugh at the same things. You gotta be friends. Tell you what, Ryder Waits, laughing lasts longer than the tangoing, that's for sure.
Ryder was pretty sure Dorothy had never seen a tango in her life. But then again, maybe she had. He had a vision of her, young and with a flower in her hair, waltzing with her husband Robert, who'd been the line cook at the diner as long as Ryder had been alive. He smiled. It was cute. He should give his town more credit. Dorothy patted him on the shoulder.
I still think you should cut that hair of yours. Now go get those pants off.
Ryder was too thrown by the entire situation to do anything other than obey. The meeting in Lexington started out fine. Ryder was almost certain that Wood knew what his decision would be, but he made small talk and then discussed Ryder's options one more time, in detail, and with a lawyer present to answer any questions. It was different than the meeting where he'd signed over the intellectual property rights to his family's bourbon. A lot more was passing out of his hands, out of his control. Halfway through the contract discussion, the door opened, and in walked Adam. Ryder's blood heated, and he immediately felt himself flush. He was unable to look away as Adam shook the lawyer's hand and then turned toward Ryder.
Mr. Waits?
Oh, so that's how they were playing it, was it? Mr. Keller, Ryder amended, hating himself for that little slip, except it brought a tiny quirk to Adam's mouth, a mouth Ryder remembered quite well indeed, and that was something. They shook hands, and the spark was there. Oh, was it ever? Just remembering how good Adam was at dirty talk, and what he could do with those hands, that mouth, gave Ryder a hard-on in his suit pants. His suit pants, which were hemmed 2 different lengths and high enough that he could possibly walk through a flood without getting them wet. Dorothy might want to think about retiring her pins and needles at some point, along with the tango. Ryder was glad that he mostly understood the terms of the contract, because his head was swimming and Adam was too close. His scent was driving Ryder crazy and making it hard for him to concentrate.
Understand the terms, Mr. Waits?
That was him, and it was a question.
I think so, said Ryder.
aware how wishy-washy that sounded. He drew himself up in the chair and reminded himself that he was making the right decision and needed to sound confident about it. He was going to get a substantial amount of money for selling the property and the still, which for some reason he hadn't really thought about. And you said, if everything goes as planned, that it should take about 2 years to get a spot on the trail up and running?
Don't quote me on that, Wood said. But that's the initial estimate, yes. The improvements to the distillery and the ability to increase production should be completed in 12 to 16 months, though.
Ryder nodded. He was still feeling a little dazed, but it was the right thing to do, and he knew it. They'd promised to try and hire locally, if possible, and Zeno's position as the bourbon master was secured, as was Heather's, who would be the full-time office manager. Selling out also meant way better health insurance plans and retirement benefits for employees as well. How soon do you plan on starting?
Just as soon as we get someone in the management position who will be coordinating all the necessary efforts.
Ryder knew that couldn't be him, of course. He didn't have the education or experience to even attempt something like that. Truth be told, he didn't want to.
Will you advertise for someone? He asked, curious about how that worked.
Actually, Wood smiled, and warning bells gently chimed in Ryder's head and echoed like one of Zeno's clocks. Yes, but I'm hoping that Mr. Keller here will accept the position. He's familiar with the town and the distillery, and his initial overview was thorough and impressive enough to convince investors to move forward with putting Gallows Grove on the trail.
Oh, fuck no.
Oh, that's...
Ryder looked at Adam, who was staring straight ahead and not blinking, as though someone had flipped the robot switch to off and powered him down.
You gonna do it?
It was maybe a little antagonistic. Maybe.
I haven't decided, Adam said, stiffly as ever.
But Ryder could see Adam's gaze sliding down to Ryder's mouth, and that was gratifying. And frustrating.
At any rate, that's neither here nor there, Wood continued. Ryder, Mr. Keller has mentioned that you're somewhat of an expert about your town and gave quite the colorful tour.
Ryder forced his gaze away from Adam's mouth and his thoughts away from blowjobs.
Not hard to do. The town's got a colorful history.
With that name, I imagine so, said the lawyer,
his accent slightly nasal, likely from some foreign place like Chicago or St. Louis.
We'd like to offer you a position working with the tourism aspect of the distillery, Wood continued,
and that definitely got Ryder's attention.
I know that we're, in essence, taking away your job, and while the monetary compensation should make up for it, I reckon you're going to be involved whether we pay you or not.
Ryder smiled, despite himself.
You reckon right. And that would be great, actually. Yeah, I'd love to.
The idea that he was going to continue to be involved made Ryder feel much better about it all. He loved the idea of leading tours and regaling visitors with the macabre charm of Gallows Grove. Where do I sign? Ryder's smile was doing seriously bad things to Adam's equilibrium. So was the sight of Ryder in that goddamn suit. Even if the cuffs of his pants were noticeably different lengths. Adam could barely focus on anything being said in the meeting, but at least he'd gone over all of it ad nauseam with Wood, so he wasn't missing anything important while thinking about fucking Ryder over the conference table. It was the simple joy on Ryder's face as he heard about that job, a job that had been Adam's suggestion, not that he wanted Ryder to ever know about that, that got to him. They were both so tied to the responsibilities of their families and their towns, but in Ryder's case, it was out of love. Adam's was just obligation, pure and simple. Obligation and cowardice. He was afraid to come out, afraid to rock the boat. And why? Wood was offering him a job in a town that, as weird as it was, he actually liked. There was a man there who was interested in him as something more than a grinder date. What the fuck was Adam so reticent about? Adam was lost in his thoughts as the meeting came to an end,
with handshakes all around and discussions of bank transfers and personnel documents that he should really pay attention to. Wood said they'd keep Ryder up to date on the management position and where they were in the hiring process, and that ended the meeting. He and the lawyers left, talking about the basketball game that night and leaving Adam and Ryder alone in the conference room. Ryder dragged a hand through his too long, messy, dark hair. "You're not taking the job, right?" Adam had no idea, but hearing Ryder say that, in a tone that clearly meant, "Please tell me you're not taking the job," made him want to be contrary. "I'm considering it," he said stiffly. "It is what I went to school for, you know. Management." There was a flash of something in Ryder's mismatched eyes, and his mouth tightened enough that Adam knew he was pissed. It belatedly occurred to him that he sounded like a horrible snob, and he remembered Ryder's comments about being uneducated and how that made him something less. As if.
"I didn't mean..."
"Whatever," said Ryder, in a tone that screamed recalcitrant emo teenager. "I know what you think of me."
"No, you really don't."
Adam brushed aside his sudden desire to explain himself and went to leave the conference room.
"Have a safe trip home."
Ryder's eyes met his, and there was challenge written in every line of his body. It made Adam want to shove him up against the door and do all the things he thought about at night. Neither of them moved, and Ryder's breathing was a little faster, but he still didn't say anything. Adam made a frustrated sound and turned to leave the room, determined to end the standoff even though it was getting him hot and bothered. He was at work, and Ryder didn't want him. That's the way it was. He'd pass on the job, and another opportunity would come up. And so what if he felt like he was losing everything he'd ever wanted? They both left the conference room and went in opposite directions, Ryder to the stairwell and Adam to his office. Or that's where Adam would have gone if he hadn't stopped when he heard the stairwell door open and shut. They were on the third floor of the building, and in a few minutes, Ryder Waits would walk out of that door and out of his life. Adam turned on his heel, strode over to the stairwell door, and yanked it open. He took the stairs two at a time until he caught up with Ryder, pushing him up against the wall, and kissed him. Ryder made a muffled sound and kissed back, his mouth opening immediately and matching Adam's intensity with his own. Adam felt Ryder's cock hard against his thigh and moaned against Ryder's mouth.
"I want to suck you. Here. Right now."
His fingers went to Ryder's belt unsteadily as they tried to work the buckle.
"Fuck you," Ryder muttered.
He reached down and grabbed at Adam's wrist, but he didn't pull it away.
"You don't want it?"
Adam asked as he cupped Ryder's dick through his pants and squeezed.
"Don't want my mouth on you? Don't want to fuck my throat?"
"Of course I want it, idiot, but not here." Ryder pushed him away, gently but firmly.
"Anyone could come in here."
"Everyone takes the elevator," Adam said, not wanting to give up on the stairwell sex idea. "You think, after that last conversation we had, I'm just going to let you suck me off?"
"Yes," Adam cleared his throat. "I was hoping."
"Well, I'm not going to let you," Ryder scowled. "I want to, but I'm not."
"I've got a car," Adam offered.
He was barely aware of what he was saying, only that he was desperate to have Ryder's dick in his mouth, and having him a few steps away wasn't doing anything to make him want it any less. Ryder's mouth was kiss-swollen and wet, lips parted. His hair was messy, his belt was half-unbuckled, and his cock was still a hard outline in his pants. "You made it clear that you weren't interested in me anymore, so fuck you and your cock-sucking mouth and your dirty talk," Ryder informed him. He was trying to fix his belt buckle, but was clearly not having an easy time of it. "I'm not just going to let you at my dick because I'm here and convenient."
"Fine." Adam crossed his arms. "And that's not why. I told you back in Gallows Grove it wasn't just that. It's never been about convenience for me."
"Yeah? Well, here's how I remember that conversation going. You told me I wouldn't fit into your life here, and you haven't tried to get in touch with me for 6 weeks. Why the fuck would I think this isn't anything else than a hookup?" Ryder finished with the belt, tucked his shirt in, and smoothed his hair back. I'm only fitting in your life now because we're in a stairwell. And your car? You can't even offer up your apartment? You really aren't seeing how maybe I'm not convinced you don't want to just get laid?
I do want to get laid, said Adam.
I'm out, said Ryder, and he turned to go.
Why didn't you take the elevator?
Adam challenged, following him.
Huh?
Because it's 3 floors, and I'm aggravated, wanted to burn off some energy, and my dick's been hard since you walked in that room. Is that what you want to hear? Or do you want me to say I wanted you to run after me and suck me off?
Ryder's eyebrows rose.
Do you even know what you want?
I know, but I don't know why I won't let myself have it, Adam said, his voice stark.
Ryder stared up at the ceiling. I don't know what to say right now. Also, it's freezing in here. His voice echoed in the stairwell, all around them both. Adam took a deep breath.
Dinner? Will you go to dinner with me?
Ryder's attention snapped back at him, and then he sighed and nodded. It better be somewhere expensive if I'm wearing this suit.
Not if you don't fix those cuffs, said Adam,
and Ryder flipped him off and turned toward the door. They met after Adam got off work a few hours later, although, admittedly, he did little work, and instead tried not to go jack off in the bathroom thinking about that almost blowjob. And despite their banter, Ryder had changed out of the suit into skinny jeans, chucks, and one of his apparently endless supply of band t-shirts. He looked much more comfortable, hot enough to make Adam want to find a stairwell again, and wary enough to keep Adam from saying anything other than, Hey, sorry, I couldn't take that suit anymore. Only ever wear one for funerals and weddings. Adam was at a point in his life where he almost felt more comfortable in suit pants than jeans, which was probably sad. They went to Joe Bologna's Pizzeria, an institution in Lexington, known for their amazing breadsticks. They didn't talk much about anything at first, until a few beers and some carbs eased the ever-present tension.
I'm sorry I said that, Adam said at length.
About how the Alfredo sauce is 1,000,000 calories? Ryder asked, as he twirled a breadstick in the aforementioned sauce.
In Gallows Grove, Adam clarified.
It has the same amount of calories here as it does there, Mr. Lexington. Adam gave a frustrated huff.
You know what I mean.
He watched Ryder take a bite of the breadstick and wondered at how hard up he was that he was finding it hot.
I shouldn't have said you were nothing without your town. I don't think that. And you not having a college degree doesn't matter to me at all.
Ryder surprised him by looking away. I shouldn't have said that you were closeted and repressed just because you wanted your family's money. That was tacky. I don't really think that's true, you know.
Yeah, well, I almost wish it were. At least then I'd know what I'm so afraid of.
Adam leaned back in the booth.
You were right when you said I didn't like my life here.
I picked up on that, Ryder said. He looked thoughtful.
I mean, Adam, I don't know what you want from me right now.
This ain't exactly my decision. It's yours. About the job, I mean.
I know, but you're... Talking to you is easy.
Adam flushed and grabbed a breadstick, more for something to do than out of any desire to eat one.
I did want to keep seeing you. I still do.
Well, here. This should make it easy. I ain't gonna pretend to be your roommate. Not now and not ever. If you're here or in Gallows Grove, don't matter. If that's something you can't handle, we'll finish our pizza or take it to go, whatever, and that's it.
Ryder paused.
Maybe we could finish what we started in that stairwell, though. Ain't opposed to that. Ryder's accent was heavier, but somehow easier, too, as if he'd been trying not to talk like himself up until that point. It made some of the tightness in Adam's chest ease to hear it.
I want to take the job, Ryder, and I want to see if this thing with us, if it's something that might work. That's what I want.
He paused.
And I definitely want to finish what we started in that stairwell. I just don't want it to all go to hell, you know?
What do you mean? Frustrated, Adam waved a hand.
Us? The distillery? Everything?
Well, me neither. Ain't no guarantees. Ryder smiled at him. Sometimes you just gotta trust yourself and go after what you want. Maybe it will all go to hell. Maybe it won't. But it's definitely gonna suck if you stay here and don't do anything you want because you're afraid it might not work out. Adam reached out slowly and took Ryder's hand in his. His own was trembling a little, but he didn't let go.
So, you remember that question you asked me at the Ever After funeral home? If maybe we could see where this goes? Is it all right if I change my answer?
Yeah, said Ryder, his eyes warm.
It is.
He squeezed Adam's hand.
And take the job, Adam. You'll be great at it.
And I can use blowjobs to get special favors as the new tourism director, whatever awesome title I come up with, and you'll have to approve.
Adam groaned, signaled the waiter, and got their pizza to go. Ryder wasn't sure he'd ever had a day quite as eventful as that one. Well, maybe his mom's funeral. There'd been a lot of people there, awake, his mom's strange final request.
I want my ashes placed in bubbles, so you can all blow me.
To be carried out, and his very real and encompassing grief to deal with. But of course that was years ago, and the memory of sunlight sparkling off the hundreds of bubbles they'd blown in Ryder's front yard made him smile. He missed his mom, because he thought they would have been great friends, the two of them, as he grew older. But she left him quite a legacy, along with a weird name, and one single remaining bottle of ash-infused bubbles. He'd been saving it for a special occasion. Ryder really should have known about that day, though. He'd drawn a card on his way out of the door, and it was the death card. Luckily, he was smart enough to know the card didn't herald an actual death. It indicated change. Which, okay, technically death was that, too. But Ryder had smiled and shaken his head, because, well, duh. Of course the day was going to be full of change. He was handing over Hanged Man bourbon to someone else entirely, not just the recipe, and it had been his family's responsibility for generations. Apparently, the universe had a little more in store for him. As he and Adam stumbled into Adam's apartment and tried to take each other's clothes off before the door was closed, Ryder couldn't help but think the universe was sneaky and also awesome.
I can't wait to suck your cock, Adam purred in Ryder's ear as he pushed him up against the now closed front door. Thought about it all day.
Adam's dirty talk was one of the things Ryder liked most about him, because it hinted at the guy he really was beneath the suits and the stuffiness and the fancy haircut.
Me too. Ryder's head went back, and he closed his eyes and moaned as Adam rubbed his hand over his cock.
The jeans were a lot tighter than his suit pants.
Fuck, get these off me.
Adam mouthed at his neck, which made Ryder shiver. He wondered if he'd forgiven Adam too easily, but as Adam's hand slid into his jeans, he couldn't find it in himself to care.
You might want to get to it, Ryder said, as he settled his hands on Adam's shoulders and gave a little push, or it ain't gonna be a very long blowjob.
You're going to come more than once, Adam informed him, bossy even though he'd slid to his knees and started working at getting Ryder's jeans down his hips.
God damn, how did you even get in these?
Given all the free pie he'd eaten in the last 6 weeks, because only an idiot would turn down free pie, Ryder had no idea.
Magic, he said, and his head banged back against the door as Adam roughly palmed his balls and wrapped his hand around Ryder's dick. Suck me. Fuck, please.
Adam licked teasingly at Ryder's dick for a few torturous seconds before he finally slid his mouth down and took Ryder's cock deep. Ryder lost the thread of reality for a few minutes, and he wasn't as good as Adam at dirty talk, but he made a valiant effort, saying,
Yeah, and so good, and suck me harder,
in a husky drawl, before he finally lost it and came hard down Adam's throat.
Sorry,
Ryder panted as Adam rose to his feet. He reached out a shaking hand and grabbed Adam's tie to tug him in close.
Told you it wasn't going to take me long. He rested his head on Adam's shoulder for a moment to catch his breath. You're so goddamn good at that. He pulled back and grinned lazily as he started to work at the knot on Adam's tie. You'll have to give me a lot of blowjobs so I can perfect my technique for when you're my boss. Adam scowled immediately and tried to put in something about how, no, he wasn't going to be Ryder's boss, not really. But Ryder ignored his huffy protestations, because it was obvious the thought turned Adam on. Now you're thinking about fucking me over a desk, aren't you? Ryder teased, and he pushed the coat off Adam's shoulders.
I'm thinking about fucking you everywhere, said Adam.
Well then. Ryder got a brief look at Adam's apartment as they struggled to strip and make their way to the bedroom. It wasn't full of exposed brick walls and artsy photographs like Ryder's, but it also didn't have cabbage rose wallpaper or creepy dolls, so. What it did have was a very large bed, which Ryder found himself face down on after a hot kiss and a little shove. He heard Adam messing around in a drawer and flipped over on his back, letting his legs fall open and stroking his cock even though he'd just come so hard that he wasn't sure he could get it up again. But the look Adam gave him as he turned around was so heated that Ryder's cock twitched in his hand.
"Want it like this," Ryder said, as Adam climbed on the bed and settled between his spread legs. As hot as Adam looked in that suit, with his tie all askew and an erection tenting his pants, he looked even better naked. Adam settled on top of him, kissed Ryder's neck, and languidly rubbed their cocks together. His was hard and ready, and Ryder's was making a valiant effort to catch up.
God, I thought about this all the time. After that meeting, I just wanted to slam the door closed, shove you on your back on the table, and fuck you until you couldn't move.
Yeah, Ryder murmured, and tilted his head to give Adam more room. I thought about that too. Show me, come on. Fuck me hard and dirty like you wanted to over that table.
Adam increased the pressure and speed of his hips, but he went still at Ryder's words. For a moment, Ryder was horrified that he might say something sweet and totally ruin the moment, especially when he pulled back and gave Ryder such a naked, open look.
I always want to fuck you hard and dirty, said Adam.
He sheathed himself with a condom and reached for the lube.
No matter where we are.
Yeah, they were totally meant to be.
I'll hold you to that, said Ryder, and he lifted his legs and rested them on Adam's shoulders. Now do it. Hurry. I don't want fingers. I just want your cock.
Adam pressed the head of his dick against him and eased in. Not as fast as Ryder wanted, and Adam stared down at him with a pleased little smirk.
You're getting my cock nice and slow.
Because you're gonna come 2 seconds after you start pounding my ass, right?
Ryder's head went back, and his back arched slightly as he accustomed himself to the feel of Adam's cock slowly breaching him.
Fuck, you're killing me.
You wanted it hard and dirty,
Adam reminded him. His voice was a low, unsteady growl that drove Ryder nearly crazy.
This ain't that hard, Ryder drawled. And the obnoxiousness was ruined somewhat by the fact that it sounded more like a whine than a taunt.
We ain't at that part yet, Adam mimicked. We're still on dirty.
Before Ryder could complain about not getting them both at once, Adam snapped his hips forward and gave it to him as hard as Ryder wanted. He kept up the dirty, too, jacking Ryder's cock and saying things like,
You look so good taking my cock, and gonna come all over you when I'm finished,
the thought of which nearly made Ryder come. He did come when Adam pulled out of him, tore the condom off, and jacked himself so hard that he shot all over Ryder's chest. Ryder's own orgasm wasn't as intense as earlier, but it still felt amazing, and he was thoroughly and completely wiped out by the time Adam returned from the bathroom carrying a warm, wet cloth.
You could lick it off, Ryder mumbled a little sleepily. It had been a long day.
Wait, no. Do that next time when I can appreciate it.
Cloth now.
Good idea, boss.
Stop, said Adam. But he didn't sound like he meant it. He traced the warm cloth over Ryder's chest and laughed a little as he smoothed it over Ryder's tattoo.
Taking life as it comes, all the ups and downs. Isn't that what you said this means?
He put the cloth aside and traced the lines of Ryder's tattoo. Ryder had come twice and eaten a lot of carbs, so he was practically half asleep by that point. Yeah, you gotta have both if you want to really experience life. You gotta trust that the universe brings the good with the bad, you know?
Not really, but I want to.
Ryder's eyes opened, and he acknowledged that as the promise it was by reaching out and tracing the same spot on Adam's chest, right above where Adam's heart beat slowly and steadily. It was a sunny morning in May when Adam decided he'd had enough of living in the ever-after funeral home. Adam had acclimated well to small-town life, except the part where there were very few places to live in a town as small as Gallows Grove. He'd moved back into the funeral home apartment, mainly because it was immediately available, with the idea of finding something more permanent a little later. Between the distillery and Ryder, he hadn't had a lot of time to devote to house hunting. But that morning he woke up, and one of those goddamn dolls was in his room, sitting on the ornate rocking chair across from his bed. It was staring at him. Adam went downstairs to find Ryder in the kitchen, humming and making what appeared to be scrambled eggs. He was wearing a pair of Adam's pajama pants, low slung on his narrow hips, and wielding the spatula with quick, jerky motions.
Seriously with the doll? Dick move.
He stood behind Ryder, wrapped his arms around his waist, and peered down into the pan over Ryder's bare shoulder.
You're making scrambled eggs?
It's supposed to be an omelet. Adam snorted and kissed the back of Ryder's neck. Then he bit. Hard. Ow! Ryder turned around and whacked at him with a spatula. He was a lot better at that than he was at making eggs. Why are you biting me?
You put a creepy doll in my room?
I had to go in there and get it, Ryder protested. That was also scary. He looked at Adam with a sly grin. I asked the dolls which one wanted to come into your room, and that one raised its hand.
Oh, shut up, Adam muttered.
But he kissed Ryder and grabbed the spatula.
And let me make you an omelet.
Adam was definitely a better cook, which was one of the things he'd learned over the last 6 months. Ryder hopped up on the counter without protest, and Adam went to the fridge to get some more eggs. He paused with his hand on the door handle, his eyebrows raised expectantly.
I did not put a doll in the fridge, dude. You would have, if you'd thought of it, don't lie.
Adam opened the doll-free fridge and reached for the eggs and a package of shredded cheddar cheese. You put me in a house with access to creepy dolls, I'm going to make them stare at you, said Ryder.
Don't think I don't notice how you won't go in the room until I put them away again, Adam said,
deftly switching the scrambled egg mess onto a plate and setting it aside. They looked dry and overcooked. Duh, those things are creepy as fuck. I made coffee, by the way. With a delicious local water, not even Ryder could mess up coffee.
You could always pour me a cup while I salvage breakfast, Adam suggested.
So dramatic. Ryder leaned in to kiss his cheek while he reached for a mug in the cabinet above Adam's head. Adam made a couple of cheese omelets, and they took their coffee and eggs out to the porch. As they passed the front room, Adam couldn't help glancing in at the world's loudest clock as it ticked away mortality.
I guess I should really think about moving before someone dies, said Adam,
as he neatly sliced into his omelet with his fork. Ryder choked on his coffee. Wow.
What?
Adam balanced his plate on his knee.
It's a shame, though. I like this place. Despite the dolls and that goddamn clock, it's a nice house.
He glanced over the rim of his mug at Ryder.
Good bones.
You're making a pun. You're officially a resident of Gallows Grove. Ryder lifted his mug in acknowledgement. Heather said you could live in her spare room. Heather is now the office manager of the distillery, Adam reminded him. I'm her boss. It's not appropriate for me to live in her house.
Uh-huh. You just don't want to deal with her during Kentucky Wildcats games.
I don't want to deal with you during those either, Adam teased and ate another bite of his omelet. It wasn't like he was any better. They were intense fans like all the rest.
At least I'm not a U of L fan, Ryder said, referring to the University of Louisville.
Like I'd ever date a U of L fan. I have standards. Adam stared out at the wide expanse of the yard. He'd offered to take care of it as part of his rent, but a few enterprising local youngsters had started a lawn care company, and Adam happily paid their $25 fee. They called themselves the Trim Reapers, and how could he say no to that? Also, Adam had never mown a lawn in his life, and was clueless how to do that. He'd thought about bribing Ryder with sex to do it for him, but the Trim Reaper spared him, ironically enough, from having to admit his lack of lawnmower knowledge.
I should call Willie, Adam acknowledged as he finished his breakfast, referring to the town's resident realtor. I've just been busy.
I know. You're a workaholic. Ryder grinned, stretched out on the chair, slid his long legs out, and put his coffee cup and plate on the little table between their chairs. He stacked his hands behind his head. I, on the other hand, am independently wealthy and can do whatever I want.
That was true, to a point. Ryder had been well paid for selling the distillery after all the legal procedures went through, and while he'd start his new position once Hanged Man was on the bourbon trail, he didn't technically have to work at the moment, which meant he worked a couple shifts at the Last Meal Diner and the Trap Door when needed, assisted Zeno at the distillery, and helped with some minor renovations for a few new businesses moving into the small downtown.
Which is manual labor and bartending, Adam said fondly.
Ryder's boundless energy was one of Adam's favorite things about him. Also, he scored free pie from the diner, and that was pretty awesome.
I don't like being bored, said Ryder, sliding down lower in the chair.
He gave Adam a heated look.
It's Saturday. We can do whatever we want.
His suggestive tone was unmistakable.
We're outside, Adam reminded him. And if you want to go upstairs, you have to go first and get rid of that fucking doll.
Fucking doll, Ryder snorted. The Mancies would be a lot more interesting if they collected those.
Maybe they keep those in the attic, Adam joked, and Ryder's laugh was as bright as the sunshine.
Even though, come to think of it, Adam had no idea what was in the attic. Despite his resolve to get Ryder away from those dolls, it still took Adam a few days to get out of the distillery and meet with Willie. Unlike when he'd first shown up in Gallows Grove, Willie eschewed his office and instead had Adam meet him at the diner, where, of course, Ryder was dishing out breakfast platters and pouring coffee. Adam noticed that Robert, the cook, wasn't letting Ryder anywhere near the kitchen.
Places, Adam?
Adam blinked and turned his attention back to Willie. From the look on Willie's face, he'd totally been staring at Ryder like a lovesick puppy.
Sorry, what was that?
Willie smiled.
I was just wondering if you had an idea what sort of places you might like to see this afternoon.
Available ones? Adam said, and Willie threw back his head and laughed.
He smacked the table with his open palm, even though Adam hadn't been joking. Ryder strolled over to fill up their coffee. His dark hair was once again in need of a cut and hanging in his face. Luckily, they had a brand new salon called Curl Up and Die just down the way. He idly flipped it away and smiled at Adam.
Good morning, Mr. Keller.
Good morning, Mr. Waits.
Ryder turned his 1,000-watt smile on Adam's dining companion.
Hey, Willie. Hey, Ryder. I'm trying to get your boyfriend here to tell me what kind of place he wants to look for.
He'll tell you one without creepy dolls, but don't listen, Ryder joked, and gave Adam a sly grin.
He likes them.
Willie's eyebrows furrowed.
Not sure what you mean, and pretty sure I don't want to know. Ain't on account of you folks being gay, either. I just don't think dolls ought to be mixed up in a grown man's business.
Adam tried, and failed, to hide his laugh in a cough.
The Mancies have a collection of dolls in the upstairs bedroom, he explained to Willie.
Willie looked completely unimpressed.
You should see what they got in the attic. You about ready, Adam?
Sure am, said Adam, rising to his feet. He paused for a moment and looked at Ryder.
You think you can take off and come with us?
Seeing as how I don't actually work here?
Sure, said Ryder, and he went to put the coffee pot away. Adam wouldn't swear to it, but he thought maybe Robert looked a little relieved as Ryder waved goodbye and hung up his apron. Unfortunately, the only available properties in Gallows Grove were not much better than the funeral home apartment. There was a place above the Rusty Nail hardware store, but it was only half renovated, and there was a steady roof leak that hadn't been attended to quite yet. There was also a house about 20 minutes out of town that Willie swore he won in a card game, but Adam had gotten used to being able to walk places, and unless it was right next to the distillery, he wanted to try and live in the town proper. Besides, Ryder had vetoed living anywhere near the distillery, which included building a house nearby. He said Adam spent enough time there, and that was probably true. As he had no desire to live in a basement apartment that smelled like weed or in Heather's extra bedroom, only the apartment above the Rusty Nail interested Adam. Willie promised to check on the progress of the renovation and get back to him, and Adam went to Ryder's place and sprawled on the couch while he thought about his living arrangements.
Maybe I could buy one of the vacant downtown buildings, lease the bottom for a business, and renovate the top as an apartment. I can handle the doll room and the clock of doom until then.
I don't know why you're so bothered by that clock. You've been to Zeno's, and he has like a million of them.
He did, and they all ticked and rang at incongruous times, which was so perfectly Gallows Grove that Adam didn't think it would do any good to point that out or complain. Zeno had enough good bourbon to make it bearable. Maybe that's what Adam needed. More bourbon.
Hey, you could always read tarot cards out of there, Adam said, warming to his plan.
He had plenty of money, and since Gallows Grove was his home, he'd like to encourage local businesses and improve the economy as much as possible. Also, there had to be some awesome puns for cards and fortunes. Or, you know, you could just move in here with me.
Adam blinked and stared at Ryder's back as Ryder messed around in the kitchen.
What?
You heard me. Ryder turned and leaned against the counter. He was trying for casual, but Adam could tell he was nervous.
It's been, what, 6 months? You and I, we seem pretty good together.
Despite you trying to terrify me with collectible dolls,
yeah, we are. Adam's heart was racing, but he didn't know why.
You think we're ready to do this?
Despite how well things had been going, Adam was still worried that he was going to do something colossally stupid and fuck all of it up. His relationship, his job, the new hometown that had adopted him.
I wouldn't have asked if I didn't, Ryder said.
But hey, if you don't believe me, let's consult the cards. He held up the deck in his hand, the well-used and much-loved one he inherited from his mother. The Rider-Waite deck. He did a dramatic, elaborate shuffle. Adam got up and joined him in the kitchen.
You seriously want to draw a card to decide if it's time for us to move in together or not?
Yep. Ryder paused his shuffling. If you're not ready, Adam, it's okay. I mean, I'll understand.
Adam was ready, he realized. He'd probably been ready when he first came back. But they'd agreed to start dating and get to know each other a little better before they made crazy decisions about cohabitating. Despite the sudden certainty, he was still curious as to what the cards would say, so he gestured toward the pile.
Who should pick one?
You, said Ryder.
I already know I want you to move in with me.
I know I want to, said Adam, because he didn't want Ryder to think he didn't want to be with him. I'm just, you know...
Being you, said Ryder, and he nodded. But that's why you've got to draw the card. It was silly. Adam knew it was. He knew he was going to say yes, but he drew the card anyway and flipped it over on the counter. The Lovers.
You set that up, accused Adam, arms crossed over his chest.
He scowled, but he didn't mean it. In fact, he'd never felt less like scowling in his life.
Admit it.
Never, Ryder said, and fanned the cards again.
But if you don't believe me, then draw another one.
Adam raised his eyebrows, reached out, and took another card. He looked at it and showed it to Ryder.
The Two of Cups, he said. What's that one mean? I have to do all the dishes when we move in together?
Ryder's eyes went wide as he stared at the card.
Not exactly. It's another relationship card, but it doesn't just mean moving in together.
Oh yeah? So what's it mean?
Ryder just smiled. You'll see. 1 year later. The Gallows Grove Park was full of people, and the tents kept the reception guests safe, in case the clouds drifting by decided to bless them with some rain. So far, the early spring day was breezy, and if it was not exactly warm, there were plenty of heat lamps to save their southern blood from freezing in the mid-50s weather.
Isn't it supposed to be good luck if it rains on your wedding day? Ryder asked Adam, who materialized beside him and handed him a cut glass tumbler with a generous portion of Hanged Man whiskey.
The glasses were the wedding favors, courtesy of Bluegrass Bourbon.
Do you think we need good luck?
Adam asked, sliding an arm around his waist as they stood and looked out at the guests.
Always. I mean, even if we don't need it for ourselves, we could, you know, parcel some out.
Too bad we couldn't have given some to the Wildcats.
Yeah, but then we would have had to have the wedding during March Madness, Ryder pointed out. Though we wouldn't have had to rent as many tents if we'd done that.
We wouldn't have had to rent any, because no one would have showed up, Adam said.
He was smiling, but they both knew he wasn't really joking.
If UK had been in the championship, we wouldn't have shown up, said Ryder. I'm glad I married someone who appreciates my basketball fanaticism. He toasted Adam with his glass. Adam toasted him back and took a sip of his bourbon. He scanned the crowd and then snorted.
I still think it's funny your Aunt Eden keeps trying to talk to my parents.
Ryder didn't think it was so much funny as fruitless. Adam's parents were humorless, cold people who'd waited until 3 days before the wedding to say they were coming. Ryder was almost certain that Adam's brother, Eric, had talked them into it. Whether that was out of love for his brother or some sense of keeping up family appearances, Ryder couldn't say. They didn't see much of Adam's family.
God, remember when you took me to meet them that first time?
Adam broke out into a grin, and Ryder thought about going ahead and swooning at how hot Adam Keller Waits looked in his suit. If you couldn't swoon over your new husband on your wedding day, when could you?
I was convinced you were going to break up with me the second we got back. It was so awful.
Ryder shook his head with a fond smile. Ups and downs, remember? Adam patted his chest, where a few weeks earlier he'd gotten the same Wheel of Fortune tattoo as part of his wedding vows. He wanted it to heal before they went to Belize on their honeymoon.
I remember, he said, his voice husky, and he leaned in to kiss Ryder,
and didn't stop until they started getting catcalled by the crowd.
You two are going to have to come cut this cake,
Heather said, as she walked up in her pretty spring dress with her UK earrings. She beamed at them and clapped her hands together.
I knew it. I knew we were going to have a gay wedding.
Heather, said Adam in his I'm your boss and we have been over this in diversity training voice.
Right. A wedding. I know. I'm sorry. I'm just so happy for y'all. I always wanted Ryder here to get himself a nice man. And you might have been a little fussy at first, but we've turned you into a keeper, haven't we?
Heather held her arms out and moved in for a hug. Adam hugged her back, abandoning the remember I'm still your boss facade, because it was pointless.
Your parents, though,
Heather admonished as she pulled away and smoothed her hand down her dress.
Now they could use a little loosening up. I'm going to bring them some more bourbon and hope that does the trick.
Ryder knew for certain that it wouldn't, but he didn't say that. Instead, he hugged Heather and said yes. He sure wished his mama were there, and yes, he knew she would have just loved Adam. Heather's eyes were tear bright when she pulled away.
You don't know how much you mean to this town, Ryder, she said. We're just so happy someone worthy of you came along.
Shit. That made him tear up, and he couldn't even hide it.
He mumbled his thanks and turned to press his face into Adam's shoulder to give himself a moment to get it together. Adam kissed the side of his head, and Ryder sucker-punched him in the kidney for being sweet and making it worse. But not too hard, because it hadn't been an easy road to get to the point where Adam was comfortable being affectionate in public. What Ryder initially mistook for stuffiness was a deep-seated loneliness born of a lack of physical affection from his family, who were the coldest people Ryder had ever met. Adam took him to meet them shortly after he moved to Gallows Grove, in an attempt to keep his promise to Ryder that he wouldn't be some dirty little secret or treated like a friend or roommate. Then he realized that was how Adam's entire family treated everyone, including their spouses, children, and siblings, and a lot of things made sense that hadn't before. Luckily, they didn't see much of the Keller clan, though Ryder had some hope for his new brother-in-law, Eric, who at least lacked basketball and got them some center court seats to a UK game for Christmas. But Gallows Grove made up in spades for what Adam was lacking, and Ryder realized how incredibly lucky he was to have been born there. He couldn't imagine what his life would be like if he'd grown up anywhere else. It was a shame that the Kellers had each other alive and well, but didn't appreciate it. He hoped something would change that in the future, but Ryder was going to leave that one up to the universe to work out. He had his hands full with his Keller, thank you very much. Or, he supposed, his Keller Waits. Ryder knew that Adam would have happily dropped the Keller from his name entirely, but he liked the idea of sticking it to his family, so he hyphenated it. Ryder offered to hyphenate and become Waits Keller, but he didn't shed any tears when Adam vetoed that idea. The past year had brought a lot of changes to Gallows Grove, all for the better. The distillery renovations were recently completed, and the work to get the grounds ready to welcome visitors on the Bourbon Trail was set to begin in a few weeks. In addition, a few more businesses had opened downtown after a bit of publicity, thanks in part to Ryder and Adam's wedding, enticed some new folks into moving in. Adam was convinced they were drawn by the themed business opportunities and quirky pun names, and Ryder couldn't say he was wrong. The flowers at their wedding, for instance, were courtesy of one such new business, a florist called Pushing Daisies. The park where they'd had their simple ceremony and low-key reception was unchanging, though someone had swapped out the red, white, and blue streamers left over from the summer for wedding bells and white lights. They said their vows in the gazebo, and then the cake was there, with plenty of bourbon and coke, ice cream, and some derby pie for the guests, courtesy of the Last Meal Diner. An hour or two into the reception, it started to sprinkle and turn colder as the temperature dropped, and the afternoon gave way to evening. They'd thought about waiting to have their wedding in the summer, but with all the work they had to do to get the town ready for tourists on the Bourbon Trail, they knew it would be next to impossible. Adam wasn't nearly as stuffy or humorless or uptight as he had been, but he was still a workaholic, and he had grown to love Hanged Man as much as Ryder loved Gallows Grove. A perfect partnership, not without its ups and downs, but worth it, all the same. "You ready to head home?" Adam asked, finally, when everyone had dispersed and the tables and chairs were stacked neatly under the gazebo. The tents and heat lamps were to remain until the rental company came to pick them up. "Yeah," Ryder smiled at him. Adam wore a suit for their wedding, though he was sans jacket because he'd given his to Ryder, who wore chucks and a band shirt, along with those jeans that Adam liked so much. "That went well, don't you think?"
"Sure," said Adam, and took his hand to squeeze it. "We could have gone all out for the band and the dance floor, you know."
Ryder did know, but he also knew that the plans for the distillery's opening night gala would satisfy his fancy dress party needs for the foreseeable future. Besides, he wanted the day to be about them, and the park was the heart of Gallows Grove, so it seemed like the perfect location. And it had been. There was just one last thing to do. The walk home was a little chilly, but luckily not too far. They looked at each other and smiled in fond remembrance as they passed the apartment where they'd lived together above the bar. They'd bought the house within a few months, knowing they'd need more space eventually, and after one particularly horrifying encounter when they'd gone upstairs after watching basketball and fucked in their living room, only to be told later by a giggling Heather that everyone could hear. Oops. The house renovations hadn't been too extensive, but there were a few major things to change, namely in the basement, and they'd only been in it for a few months. Not even enough time to change the sign, which still said, Ever After Funeral Home. It wasn't a funeral home anymore, as the Manseys had been pleased to sell the place, though they hadn't wanted those creepy dolls, not that Ryder could blame them. So they donated them to a toy drive while silently apologizing for all the nightmares they'd inadvertently be causing, though Ryder hid a few away just to scare Adam with later, because that was hilarious. So, while the good folks of Gallows Grove would have to find another location to wake their dead, most people didn't mind too much. As they approached the house, Ryder noticed that the sign in front was gone, or it had been replaced with a new one, from which white and blue balloons danced merrily in the increasingly heavy breeze. Heather, said Adam. Heather, Ryder agreed, and shook his head. Wildcat colors, of course. He'd been so distracted by the balloons that it took him a moment to read the sign. Someone had taken off the funeral home part, and in front of the ever after had added, Oh, Lord. Oh, my God, Ryder started laughing. That's awful. At least she didn't put gay happily ever after, said Adam, and Ryder nearly tripped over the curb laughing. She's so getting a haunted funeral home doll on Administrative Professionals Day, Adam said, and Ryder's eyebrows shut up. Adam smirked at him. Like you didn't keep one. Come on. Hmph, said Ryder, and he kissed Adam. On the porch, he put a hand on Adam's chest and said, Hey, stay here. There's one last wedding thing we gotta do, all right? It's cold out here, said Adam. Not that. Ryder flashed a grin at him, kissed him again, and went into the house. The old funeral parlor was completely gone, renovated into a kick-ass living room full of band posters, art prints, and state-of-the-art electronics. He grabbed a bottle of bourbon, a small bottle, and two bubble wands, went back onto the porch, and sat down next to Adam on the steps. He handed one of the bubble wands to Adam, who knew immediately what it was, and smiled.
I thought maybe you'd save this for the gala, or that first tour stop.
Nope. This one is all me and all you. He took a swig from the bourbon, passed it to Adam, and uncapped the bottle of ash-infused bubbles. He cleared his throat and felt like he should say something, even though he wasn't sure what. Mama, this is Adam. He's a good guy, and you'd really like him. I wish you could have been here today. You could have started talking about astrological birth charts and totally freaked out Adam's parents. Beside him, Adam added,
That's true.
Okay. That seemed good enough. So Ryder opened the little bubble container, dipped his wand in, and blew the bubbles. Adam sat next to him and did the same, and they took turns, dipping the wand in and sending the bubbles out from under the protection of the porch, where they immediately popped in the rain. Said Adam, isn't this kind of morbid? Ryder laughed. The sound carried along with the bubbles out into the night. My mom would love it. Something about the elements coming together. Come on, we got a lot of bubbles left to blow. Adam didn't argue, and they sat there, him in dress shirt and tie, Ryder in a suit jacket and a concert tee, and blew bubbles into the breeze for half an hour. Until they were gone. Feeling peaceful, Ryder stood up, stretched, and tugged Adam up to kiss him. Now we can do that other thing, he said. Hey, thanks for that.
For blowing bubbles infused with your dead mother's ashes into the rain? You're welcome. God, I really must love you.
You do. I love you too.
Ryder paused as a sound caught at the edges of his awareness.
Hey, do you hear that?
What? Adam asked, looking wary. Do I hear what?
That sound, Ryder said unhelpfully, straining to hear it. It sounds like...
Ticking?
Asked Adam, his eyes narrowed as though Ryder were pulling his leg. No, said Ryder as he heard it again. It sounds like a bell. Adam laughed.
About time, he said, and pulled Ryder into a kiss before Ryder could ask what the hell that meant.
When I saw the call for Dream Spinner's States of Love series, I was immediately thrilled by the idea of writing a story set in Kentucky, which happens to be my home state and where the vast majority of my family live. It was a lot of fun to throw in all the references to the University of Kentucky Wildcats, as my family, like the characters in this story, are all insane UK fans who bleed blue and still won't say a certain former Duke Blue Devil basketball player's name out loud. They'd disown me, I think, if I actually put it in print. Gallows Grove is a fictional town, which is a shame, because I fell in love with all the puntastic business names that people helped me come up with. Thank you, everyone on Facebook. But Elliott County is real. As mentioned in the story, it really is one of the only places you can find the mineral kimberlite. But the idea that it would substantially influence the flavor of the local water, and thus the bourbon made in Gallows Grove, is fictional. Though it is true that one of the most important components of Kentucky bourbon is the limestone water, which is rich in calcium and, as noted in the story, the reason you find so many bourbon distilleries and horse farms located next to each other. The calcium is good for both bourbon and bones, and the bourbon is the best in the world, though it's possible I may be a bit biased. Also, if you've never had Cincinnati-style chili and you have the chance to try some, do it. I personally recommend Gold Star over Skyline, but I'll never turn down either.
States of Love, Book 1. Written by Avon Gale. Narrated by Kurt Graves. Copyright 2016 by Avon Gale. Production copyright 2017 by Dream Spinner Press.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.